Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. Final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Once again, for coming to Bard's Logic, a political talk, part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Thank you very much, whether you're listening from Blog Talk Radio or listening from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which you can find by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Now, tonight, we have some very special guests to talk about the revitalizing the Second Amendment, which is the first clause of the Second Amendment. And tonight, we have some special guests such as David Callahan, Jim Condit Jr., attorney Richard Fry, among others, which will also include, we have here Donna Fossey, Scott Warmack, Scott Silver. And we do also have the author of The Hidden Fourth Branch, which has also been a panelist on this show and also has hosted some shows with me as well, and that is Kelly Mordecai. I see Kelly is on the line and some others, and we will also bring you in. But first, Kelly, thank you very much for coming into the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm calling you from the I'm Kelly Mordecai from the FEMA Region 9. I mean, I used to call it California, but I guess it's FEMA Region 9. So happy to be here. I am beyond excited. This is the well-regulated militia. I mean, this is so exciting. You know, this is unlike the unregulated clowns. I mean, unregulated Congress. This is something that I think everybody should know. I'm really excited. I want to give a little bit more about several people we've just talked about. And before I do, I want to give a short history thing, because I'm into history, and I think it might be appropriate for tonight. There's a curricula that I'm going to be proposing in the California schools, and I just want to go ahead and read this, because it kind of updates us on history. This is called The Start of Our Country, the USA. This is for a sixth grade history class. It's the curriculum proposing. All right, here we go. In 1776, 13 colonies were the subject of King George. King George was mean, a tyrant. So the U.S. federal government called a meeting in Independence Hall, Philadelphia. Each colony was mandated by the federal government to send a representative to Independence Hall. At this convention, the federal government presented a constitution and a declaration of independence for the colonies to sign on to. The federal government promised each colony statehood if they signed, and also minimal taxes to run the federal government. All 13 colonies signed the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776, and adopted the federal constitution. This made the colonies states by federal decree. Hence, we were called the United States. But a piece of paper did not produce free states, as King George wasn't about to give up these colonies. A war began, a long and brutal war. As the states paid income tax to the federal government, the feds fought off the British. The war for independence was tough, but the U.S. Army, or Colonial Army, prevailed with no help by any state militias. That's because the militias were only for local law enforcement. They are now called local police or the Sheriff's Department. In 1783, the Treaty of Peace was signed by the federal government and Great Britain. In this, the 13 colonies were acknowledged by King George as sovereign states. The first election. Since the federal government is rather slow to do anything, official elections were held 5 years later in 1788, and George Washington was elected as the first president. Congressmen were also elected, and in 1789, they all took official office for the first time. That spring, James Madison proposed in Congress the famous Bill of Rights. The federal government approved these and sent them to the states to be ratified. The states were required to ratify these if they wanted any federal funding. The Bill of Rights were finally ratified when the required ninth state, Louisiana, ratified the Bill of Rights on the 32nd of November, 1791. 50 states. Since that day on July 4, 1776, more states have joined the Union of States known as the United States. Each state is glad to pay the federal government whatever taxes necessary to protect them from all foreign enemies, including terrorists, and to ensure social justice. Yes, all the states are glad to have the federal government be the end-all, be-all of everything because the federal government kicked tyrant King George off the continent, defends us, and most importantly, because the federal government authorized each state's very existence. The end. Now, teacher's notes. Kids may ask about politics and the Tea Party. Make sure that you indoctrinate them with key phrases about the Tea Party, like racist, bigots, KKK members, nutcases, etc. This piece of revisionist history has been brought to you by Kelly Lee Mordecai.
Well, that's very interesting, Kelly. Thank you very much. And I do believe we also have some of the guests on the show. On the line, I should say, so I will open them up one by one. First, we have here Mr. David Callahan. I will open up his mic. Kelly, go ahead and say hello. We'll start with you. Thank you very much, David, for calling in.
Well, thank you, Robert. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Good. Well, thank you for having us tonight. We're very excited about the opportunity to share with people about this very important subject. Arguably, in many of our minds, this should be at the top of everybody's mind today. If you think about all of the man years, the multiple man years of effort that have been put out, particularly in the last 2 years, in the efforts of the liberty-minded people to try to pursue Dr. Ron Paul being elected, or any of the what we would call the conservative candidates for the Republican Party, just tremendous amounts of effort, but the corruption and the duplicity of what we call the unity party of the Republicans and the Democrats.
The duopoly?
All of that effort really didn't seem to do much. It seems like we're worse off now than we were, even a few years ago. And in the minds of many of us, going in this direction of looking at the Second Amendment more carefully, trying to understand what the first clause of the Second Amendment is all about, which states that the a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. We tend as a country to focus entirely on that second clause and not give any credibility these days to the first clause. And so, you know, it's really important that we begin to address this issue, vitally important, in fact, in our minds. In fact, so important that many of us believe that if we do not revitalize the first clause, we have no chance of rewriting this boat, if you know what I'm saying. So we're grateful to be here tonight, and we've got some other folks that are part of our organization on the line that we think are going to provide some additional value in this conversation tonight, and we're very excited about the opportunity to be here.
Well, David, Kelly here, I'm waiting for you to call me on the revisionist history I started with.
Kelly, you just sound like, you know, I've been a public school teacher for years, and you just sound like, that sounds just like what was being taught in the classrooms down the street from my math and science class. So yeah, totally wrong, of course. A lot of that, what you mentioned there was certainly revised from what we have very clearly a understanding of in terms of the founding of our country. For example, you know, many people, when we talk about the militiamen, the Minutemen of Massachusetts, who single-handedly pushed back and defeated the Redcoats from the beginning in Concord and Lexington, most people have a thought, a concept in their mind that these were just a bunch of farmers and merchants that decided, hey, we're just not going to stand up to this stuff. This is nonsense. And all of a sudden, out of some whim or spontaneity, got their guns, went out in the woods, and started taking pot shots at the Redcoats. But the fact that's furthest from the truth. The truth is that these men had been training on a regular basis. They were mustered regularly, and that was not just because they decided they were going to put together some private militia, but they were actually the governmental militia of the colony of Massachusetts. And they were actually regulated by law to be mustered on a regular basis. And in fact, if you want to talk about arms control, the arms control in that day is that you were required to have an arm, and that was to be an adequate piece of firearm that was able to stop any kind of an attack, whether that be from Indians or from the powers that be out of Great Britain, out of England, that were attempting to thwart the liberties and the rights of the people of the colonies. So that in and of itself was a starting point. I mean, you mentioned the fact that the federal government was trying to turn some things on its head. Well, there was no federal government, obviously, in 1774 and 1775. And even up in 1787 with the Constitution, the concept of federal government was not what we call it today. Today we think of it as being Washington, D.C., but in reality the federal government, as we know it in a constitutional sense, is the general government, which is made up of the Congress, the presidency, and the Supreme Court in Washington, and then the states as another level of federalism, and then the counties and the cities and communities all the way down to the people. And that's truly what federalism is. We've got this thing totally screwed up in our minds, and this is part of where our conversation is going here. We need to be reeducated. I would say it this way. If we have one purpose in this phone call tonight, it's simply to help people to become reeducated, to start looking back at the facts as they really are historically, from a constitutional point of view, and we have some tremendous resources available to help us do this, most importantly the work of Dr. Edwin Vieira, which we'll be talking about here shortly. So,
I really like what you're saying, and I purposely wrote revisionist history, and I went way off the deep end, Louisiana, the ninth state of the 32nd of a month. I did this because there are so many attempts to rewrite history, and the importance of one element, the militia, that we have lost this, and I'm so glad you're going to resurrect this tonight, you and Jim Condit and Richard Fry, the attorney. Good group of people you got here tonight.
And speaking of Mr. Condit, he is the next for me to open up the line. And what I do on Bard's Logic here is I do not close out the lines or close off anyone's mic after I open it, unless, of course, there's a need to do so. So, David, I'll keep your line open, of course, as well as yours, Kelly, and I will open up Jim. He's a local guy here, actually, for me, being from the once great state of Ohio. And I'll maybe explain later why I say the once great state of Ohio. But welcome very much, Jim, for coming to the show.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'd like to maybe address people that are totally new to this situation and this concept of the revitalized, well-regulated militia. We had a group called Watch the Vote back in January of 2012 when we were trying to get a fair count for Ron Paul and everybody else at the Iowa caucus. Bunch of people came together, and won't go into it too deeply, but thanks to a local activist, Edward True, we were able to force the GOP of Iowa to change their winner two weeks after the caucus. That's the first time in American history that happened. I believe, though, that Ron Paul won that caucus, and I now believe I know how they fixed it and how they fixed it against Buchanan. But there were many honest people in that state, and we were dealing with some of those, and that's how we were able to force them to change the winner by the grace of God. But that brought together people who then eventually said, gee, we want to make up a comprehensive program to try to give people the vision of how we actually could win back the country. And that turned into Guardians for Liberty, and that's at guardiansforliberty.com. And we got seven principles there, but the second principle, the first one is precinct, on how if we're going to do this peacefully, we all got to run for our precinct and try to take over the Democrat and Republican parties. But the second one, and arguably, as David said, the most important one, is the revitalization of the Second Amendment, both the clause we're all aware of keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed, but also the first phrase, which is the well-regulated militia. Now, I had heard some debates on this over the last decade before I ran into Dr. Edwin Vieira, who David is basing his groups on his Dr. Vieira's work. And I came away, these are like the ACLU against some gun spokesman, pro-gun spokesman, and I came away from both of them thinking, boy, we didn't really answer that well. The ACLU was saying that the well-regulated militia, that the state had the right to regulate who would have guns. And I didn't feel we had answered it that well. But then when I ran into Dr. Vieira, who's maybe the foremost constitutional scholar in the country, and he's now written the books on this subject, Constitutional Homeland Security and the Sword and Sovereignty, which is 2,000 pages, and he answered it. The founding fathers, well-regulated militia, what they wanted was that this is not a lawless group of people that go out in the woods on the weekends and fatigues, and maybe the public thinks they're contemplating some anarchical bombing somewhere to make a point to the government. No, this is the force of law. This is the full authority and prestige of under the law, because what the founding fathers envisioned was that under the governor of the state, you would have every able-bodied man in some states back then between 18 and 45 were the militia. Every able-bodied man were the militia under the governor and under a county authority, and they would be required to have arms and to learn how to use them. And if they didn't show up to be trained once a year, they could be fined by the sheriff. So this is the what David's trying to do here, and Richard Fry and the others, is resurrect a group, and we're recognizing it as a critical thing. And I'll sum up here in a minute, but I want to tell you why it's so critical right this year and last year, why this is so critical that we get this idea going again and get it passed through the state legislatures if possible, and that's what we have to do. But in other words, this is not anarchy. This is not people running around in the woods on the weekends with fatigue. This is a well-constituted, well-regulated militia, as the founding fathers said. David Callahan didn't say, Jim Condit didn't say, Richard Fry didn't say that. The founding fathers said this, the well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Somebody pointed out to me in the group that's the only time they said something was necessary the security of the free state, because the founding fathers wanted that well-regulated militia to be able to help the people in times of tragedy like an earthquake or Hurricane Sandy or this type of thing, to guard against foreign invasion. But most importantly, they were worried about an overweening federal government, And that's what we're facing today. That's what we're facing when we hear the Homeland Security is building 30,000 killer spy drones to fly over America. Apparently has bought 2,800 tanks to roll around the streets of America. So two more points, and then I'll end this monologue or filibuster, whatever it is. One is that I've been a little worried the amount of weapons that Homeland Security and the bullets, those 1.6 billion hollow point bullets, that's Homeland Security. That's to be used within the United States. What do we do about this? Because this would, all of this weaponry would tend to trump the Second Amendment if we just had rifles. But this is another reason for the well-regulated militia under the governor, because the state militias, to stop the federal government from turning us into a tyranny, should have the authority to have their own anti-drone weapons and their own weaponry that can combat tanks. And this, you know, it's a little worrisome to say, well, everybody, every citizen should be allowed to have anti-drone weapons, but certainly the militia and the governor in each state could have them, so the federal government knows they have an even par of weapons. The second thing is, we just saw Ron Paul and his supporters get cheated state after state after state. This happened to us in Cincinnati back in 1990. We won the control of the Republican Party. It was on a technicality, but clearly we won it, and the police did not enforce us taking over the Republican headquarters. They stood and kept us from taking over the Republican headquarters that we had won. Now, this came nationwide in 2012 as people saw the Ron Paul people get cheated in place after place after place. So what we need is the sheriff and or the well-regulated militia if it comes into being, but we need the police power to come to these meetings and enforce fair rules and the winners. This is what happened. We won in many places throughout the caucuses and the gatherings of 2012, and were reversed because the police power was persuaded to be with the good old boys network. We need to inform the sheriffs in advance, and hopefully eventually the well-regulated militia, to come to any of these meetings and just enforce that whoever wins wins. That the majority that wins a meeting gets to take the victory and take control of whatever they were seeking. And then this way we can take back the parties, take back the Congress, and take back the country. But we're going to need the well-regulated militia to do it. And, David, I think you should give out the website that you have for this, for the revitalizing the Second Amendment right now, so that anyone who is not familiar with this to this point can go to the website after the show or whatever.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jim. The website for our organization, and the name of the organization we've created, is called Revitalizing the Second Amendment. But we are using the acronym RT2A. R for revitalize, T for the, 2 for second, A for amendment. RT2A.org. And that's the website, RT2A.org. Also on Facebook, if you go to facebook.com/RT2A.org, that's also a place where you can get all kinds of really great information. We've got articles on there. We've got interviews with Dr. Vieira talking about this issue from several sources. We're constantly putting up new information virtually every day and just trying to get people to friend the page and connect with us and then start spreading this all over the country to everyone you know. This is really a re-education effort. And let me explain how fundamental or foundational this re-education is. Most people, when I sit and talk to them about this, I refer to the fact that the Second Amendment isn't where the starting point of this is. The well-regulated militia precedes the Constitution by 150 years. The militias literally go back to what they call the yeomen of England. And prior to coming to this country, they had the same kind of a system in England. But the point is, in the colonies, even from the days of Plymouth and the early Massachusetts Bay Colony, there were statutes in the code, at least as early as 1699, which pointed to the militia of Rhode Island, for example. Dr. Edwin Vieira has written a 2,304-page book called The Sword and Sovereignty. And in there on pages 79 to 81, I believe it is. I could be off by a few page numbers. But he actually quotes the titles of different parts of these statutes. which point, and it's interesting because the titles are pretty telling. The titles of some of these statutes that were actually in the Rhode Island Code said things like this: an act for the better regulating the militia and for punishing offenders as shall not conform to the law thereunto relating. It was clear to the people of that day what regulating the militia meant. It meant that there was a law and that they were required to follow that law, and if they didn't, there was provisions in the law for punishing offenders as shall not conform to the law. Now, how many times, Robert, have you heard that one?
David, if I could say one other thing real quick. You told me before the show that at
RT2A.org.
Okay, RT2A.org. I should know that by now, that you're going to have membership up and running in a week or two. And
yes.
Dr. Vieira tried to get some of the larger gun groups to emphasize this well-regulated militia, and so far they haven't been willing to do it. So I have no hesitation saying every concerned patriot, because it's going to be a reasonable membership, every concerned citizen in America should become a member of revitalizing the Second Amendment when the membership goes up. I have no hesitation in saying that, because if we don't get going on this and about, you know, four or five other things such as transparent elections, et cetera, but especially this, because this is the police power that enforces it for the good guys, then the country is going to be lost. So I have no hesitation in saying every person should become a member, a dues-paying member of this revitalizing the Second Amendment group.
Well, Jim, I want to tell you here, I want to add some more to the elections, and sometimes I'm very upset with Jim Condit because he alerted me to the chronic problem with electronic election fraud, and I've computer programmed in like three languages, and it spooked me when stuff he was showing, and then Clinton Curtis testifying in a congressional hearing, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is spooky. Yeah, I watched Ron Paul. Anyway, the militia, okay? The militia can be involved in watching the vote, even helping count paper ballots. That is one of our goals at Guardians for Liberty. And one of the things, if you want to watch what a militia could do, is Google on YouTube the Athens Revolt. This happened in 1946 or 1947. Veterans went off the war. They came back, and they saw the corruption in the county, and the sheriff was basically rigging the vote. If you watch this movie, it's an eye-opener. Well, these guys... okay, they're veterans. They weren't afraid to die. They were a unified team. The sheriff basically closed the polls early, shot somebody because they were losing. And so the sheriff took the ballot box into his sheriff's department, and it was big old brick building. And the veterans said, "We're tired of this. They went to the army. They got a bunch of guns. And so you're coming out, and we're going to count the ballots. We ain't letting you horse around with this." And you watch this, and it's like, oh, my gosh. And so they counted the ballots, and the veterans actually won and replaced the sheriff, the DA, the yada, yada. They actually took back their county. Now, they weren't necessarily regulated, but ironically, they claimed the guns, and the next morning they had the guns back in the armory. I mean, this is self-regulated, but this is an example of how we can ensure a true vote.
Go ahead.
No, I just want to say real quick, and do you think if the if the veterans who just got back from World War II, if they hadn't forced the issue of counting the vote, we can all guarantee that the corrupt mayor would have won again, or he would have won again. But when they counted him in public, and why did he want to count him in secret? That's the question everybody asks. Why do all our counties, except for a little part of New Hampshire, want to count the votes in secret? When somebody wants to count your votes in secret, you've got a problem, because they want to have it open to cheat. And the what Kelly was just describing to you, I think it's Kraft Home Theater. There's a movie you can get online for like $19.95. It's called An American Story, and it's all about this thing that happened in Athens, Tennessee, in 1946. I believe this fictional version, it's set in Texas, but it really captures the essence of what happened in the battle for Athens in 1946, Athens, Tennessee.
Well, yeah, you can Google it on YouTube. Just go search on YouTube and you'll watch it. You'll be amazed. I want to hear from Richard, by the way, the attorney.
Real quick, Kelly, I don't mean to interject, but I do see that it is the bottom of the hour. It is 10:30, so I'm going to interject for a little bit. And just say for the new folks coming to the show, if you're a grassroots, conservative, liberty-minded folk and want to hear more, from the show, consider following it by going to the homepage of the show on Blog Talk Radio. And there's a little follow button underneath the icon of the show. Just click that and you'll get email updates on when the show will be airing. And also look at the archives, because we do have some shows that have been archived that do talk about the sheriffs and some of the things going on with some sheriffs in the counties around the country. And also on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, one of the things I do here on the Get Involved page is supply folks with links. So for those who may not listen to the show tonight, they'll also be able to access the links to the Revitalize the Second Amendment. So because I'll put some links up there on the Get Involved page on the website as well for people who visit the website. So what I'm going to do now is I have a couple other folks on the line, but I'm trying to do this in order. And I will keep, as I said, the other mics open. But at this time, I'm going to open up Scott Womack's line. And thank you very much, Scott, for calling into the show. How are you? Scott, are you there? Okay, not hearing anything from Scott. But then I will leave the mic open just in case he wants to chime in. But next I have on the line Richard Fry. Rich Fry, thank you very much for calling the show. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. What we'll do now is, I know Kelly wanted to chime in about something, so go ahead and finish that up, Kelly, if you would. And then I'd like to give the floor to Richard afterwards, okay?
Yeah, well, I'm so, you know, David, Jim, and Richard Fry are doers. I know you guys were at the GOP National Convention. Richard, you're an attorney. We've talked about some things. These guys are doers, okay? And I don't know if you were a delegate or not, Richard, but I don't know. I'll just tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you study the Constitution. You're one of the few attorneys that study it furiously. I don't know. Just tell us a little bit more how you came to the realization that we got to do something here.
Well, I suppose my first involvement was probably back in maybe 2005 or 2006. And it really related to the fact that the state of Kansas was treating its citizens as second class, giving preference to illegal aliens. And when I was advised of that, I remember exactly what I said. I said, no, that can't happen, not in America. And I investigated that, and I found out it was true. And so I started investigating more. And that's how I got into the fact that the Constitution wasn't being followed, we weren't being listened to, that we had a disconnect between our representatives. You know, they don't represent us anymore. They represent special interests, which really include the GOP and the Democrats. And so it just evolved from there. And I came to a realization that the immigration, illegal immigration problem, was really a symptom of a much deeper problem. And so it's my work has kind of evolved in that fashion.
I'm glad that Richard's on the line with us. This is David again.
Okay.
When we were a little earlier in this conversation, you know, Jim and Kelly were pointing to the issue of elections. And we also talked about the situation in Athens with those soldiers returning from the Second World War who saw that there was a necessity to do something. And Richard, I know we've had many conversations, and maybe where you might like to take us at this time. And again, because the purpose of this whole conversation tonight is to help frame the conversation, if you will. It's to help us to get some pieces of this puzzle. The way I look at it is we're now looking at it at starting to build a jigsaw puzzle. And when you first start building a jigsaw puzzle, you have all these random pieces and you just kind of start working on the edges to try to find some sense of order to it. But eventually you end up with a little spot that you've got enough of the puzzle that you start seeing that things are starting to come together. Well, I kind of feel like that's where we are in this whole conversation. We're just beginning to put together specific parts of the puzzle. We aren't anywhere near to where we need to be in the American populace of having enough of this clarity in our minds to really do what needs to be done. We've got to spend the time here over the next months to just get to where people are talking this properly and have a right conversation. And Richard, where I think it might be helpful that you would take us at this point is help give us a framework of what, you know, the issues of common law and constitutional law and how this militia idea fits in terms of where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. And, you know, we can get into, and we need to have a little conversation about how the Dick Law affected everything in 1903, because that was a linchpin to the whole change that occurred. But maybe you can just kind of give us a framework, if you would,
well,
a little bit.
And real quick, gentlemen, I'm glad you mentioned the Dick Law, because I was looking over an article that one of the things I like to do here on Bard's Logic is there's also a chat aspect where some folks can go in chat as well. And I like to bring in some of the people and some of their comments from the chat and bring it onto the show, because not everyone's always comfortable actually calling in and having their voices on air. But this is from Rosie Haas, and the reason I bring this in now, because you mentioned the Dick Law, is she says, I address this from the point of view of someone who was nanny-stated from birth. Natural Activist Journal by Rosie Haas. People can check out the article at http://eepurl.com/WZIGN. Apologize for interrupting you folks, but since you did mention that, you know, I thought this would be a good time to mention it because she does mention it in the article. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you,
sure.
Rosie, for contributing in the chat. Go ahead.
Okay, so, yeah, Richard, if you would just go ahead and, you know.
Well, I think the first thing that we have to realize that the concept of having a militia is not new, and it's more than a few centuries old. I mean, certainly the Anglo-Saxons had the same concept, but it went back a millennium. And, in fact, if we go even to the Bible, into Acts, I think it's 16, 22, and 23, we hear the Apostle Paul getting into trouble, either being grabbed by government officials or a gang and are going to beat him or have beat him. And he would say, wait a minute, guys, you need to understand, I'm a Roman citizen. And that would strike terror in their hearts, because they understood if they beat a Roman or put a Roman into chains, there would be hell to pay. And that was based on the ancient principle of allegiance and protection. And that is one of the one sides, the militia is one side of that equation, and that is the protection side, where the government, the sovereign, owed a protection to his citizens, to his subjects, and to protect their rights, to protect them from invasion, and they in turn owed him, the sovereign, allegiance, which meant that they would come to his aid if he was being attacked or invaded. They would come if he had made, you know, if he called them to arms. So, I mean, it's an ancient principle that many, many, many societies have recognized, probably most, if not all the societies have recognized. And our branch of it does come from the English and from the Anglo-Saxons. They have the same thing. Now, the one thing that is unique in all the history of mankind is that the Americans, for the first time in history, one of the primary purposes of the militia was to protect the citizens from the central government, from the standing army of the central government. And, of course, that was consistent with the American belief of sovereignty, which is that the government wasn't sovereign, it was the people that were sovereign. So that's where it came from, and then, of course, it has been constitutionalized, if you will, and which, again, mandates basically the states to maintain a militia, which is a term of art. You know, if you're not associated, if you're not a governmental entity, you're not a militia. It's a term of art. It has a very particular meaning, and it's not just anybody and everybody that wants to get together. So you do have two sides of it. You have the allegiance and protection that require it, and then you also have the constitutional requirement that the states maintain that militia under allegiance and protection.
Richard, if I might take and kind of take that to another step, and that is two issues. You bring up this issue of allegiance and protection. Last year, and as Kelly pointed out, we're not just sitting on our hands and just twiddling our thumbs on this stuff. We're trying to do some practical things. I went to my legislator in my state and approached the legislator to start discussing a way to put a policy study in place to address this issue of revitalizing the militia in my state. And in the conversation, I asked a very simple question. Actually, I don't know if you call it a simple question. It's a pretty long question, but it's simple to understand. I said to her, this lady who was my state legislator in the House of Representatives, I said, of the state of Florida, not the National House of Representatives or in Washington, but I said, what is the state of Florida going to do to protect me and my fellow citizens from the overreach of the standing military in coming into the state of Florida and taking any of us away without due process, notification of next of kin, or getting an attorney to represent me, having us taken away to an undisclosed location or even to a foreign country to be tried, and having us incarcerated in that unknown location until the end of the hostilities of the war on terror, which may never end. And the point of that, her answer was, I don't know. I mean, which is pathetic for a legislator to even respond that way in my mind. But the key point of that question is if the state does not provide a protection to me, I have no duty of allegiance, and my fellow citizens don't either. If there is no protection from the state, we have no obligation of duty of allegiance. And so this is a critical question. This is the key question of our time, and it actually falls all the way back to the Declaration of Independence and the principle of the Declaration, which says that we have the right, in fact, we have the duty to throw off any government that doesn't provide us protection, which is what you're pointing to, Richard. And then the other thing I wanted to point, what I want to also point out is when you're pointing to the Constitution, here's the thing that people don't realize about the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment was preceded by 4 years by the article, by the Constitution, the statute of the Constitution, in which there are references to the militia. It doesn't say the well-regulated militia, but that's assumed in the Constitution. In Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15, it says that Congress shall provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. And then in 16, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states, respectively, the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. In other words, the Constitution actually recognizes the longstanding duty and authority of the states to be the ones who actually order and train the militia. And so this is the thing we got to get people to understand. The militia is a governmental organization, and we have to emphasize they are governmental entities performing governmental functions and composed of members of the supreme governmental authority in this country, which is the people of this country. And we as the people need to demand this be put back. And that's the key point here. It's been broken, and it's got to be fixed, and we need to demand that our legislators fix it. And that's the key point of what we're trying to help people understand in this time tonight. Jim, do you have any comments on this, or Rich? Richard?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have the point absolutely correct. I mean, in fact, if you look at our Declaration of Independence, we really didn't declare our independence. What we did is acknowledged that we had been set free, and it says right in the Declaration, referring to the king, he has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection. That's the principle of protection of allegiance. He was not going to protect them anymore from Indians. The king was not protecting them from the French. And they say he's waging war against us. Well, you can't wage war against against those under your protection. So we were fighting to maintain our independence because, you know, King James wanted his cake and eat it too. He didn't want any of the duties and responsibilities, but he wanted all the benefits. And so that's where he set us free.
Kelly here, I want to throw out some thoughts about the Declaration, which I love, and I've memorized quite a bit of it. They said of King George, this is a summary statement, he has plundered our seas, ravaged our coast, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Such a tyrant is not fit to rule, to be the ruler of a free people. Now, you look at Thomas Jefferson freely expressing this, and the signers, when they signed that, they signed their own death warrant. And why did they have the empowerment to do this? Because they knew the militia was present, just like the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson. You don't say those kinds of things unless you know your friends, your allies, your buddies in the neighborhood are going to protect you. And so this well-regulated militia, it can also affirm our power of free speech, which is badly needed these days.
Yes, it is. You know, and Kelly, I want to go a little bit further with that because we have a tremendous opportunity as well as a situation which is a little bit tenuous, you know, a little bit scary in a way, because we have within the we don't have to go as far as the founding fathers went, because you know when Jefferson and the committee that forged the Declaration were talking, they said that we're created equal, endowed with certain inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, but that we then, when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, the ends of us being able to preserve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government and lay the foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as shall secure our safety and happiness. But the point is, they were pointing to the fact that they already had in place this institution or this establishment called the well-regulated militia, and it was actually functioning very well. Well, unfortunately, we've lost it. Here's the way Dr. Vieira says it, which I appreciate. He says it's kind of like it's hidden under the paper, and you got to lift the paper up to see it. But the fact is that it's still there, and we don't have to go and establish new government. We just simply need to put back the government that's there. We need to put back this provision in our Constitution, and it's actually still in the constitutions of the 50 states. It's just pointed in the wrong place. What the thing that happened with the Dick Law of 1903 and the subsequent Militia Acts in 1914, 1916, and 1933 was that Congress persuaded the states to change their laws, to alter the way that the militia was pointed. And what they did was came in and established the National Guard, and then under some other provisions of the Constitution, took their authority as Congress to set up a substitutionary militia. George Washington, in his presentation to Congress in 1790, called the Organization of the Militia. In that document, he actually stated, if we move away from a rotational militia and we replace it with a substitutionary militia, it will be the end of the country in time. And nothing more prescient has ever been stated, in my opinion, except maybe what Jefferson said about the banks, but that's another story for another night. But the point here is that what we're understanding now is that we just simply need to work toward revitalizing. And what does revitalizing mean? It means to bring life back to the militia. It's something that has been very much alive in this country up until the early 1900s, and then it was transmogrified, is the term that Dr. Vieira again uses in his book. And I'm not trying to, you know, point to Dr. Vieira just simply to, you know, give him credit. It's the point that he gives us some tremendous concepts here as to what happened. And I really urge everybody, and if you go to our website, rt2a.org, we have three different resources that Dr. Vieira has developed. One is his book, Constitutional Homeland Security, which is it's actually a workbook that we can all use in our local communities to fix this problem. There's his 2,304-page book, The Sword and Sovereignty, a constitutional history, or it's a history of the militia of the several states. and the constitutional principles of it. A tremendous book. I'm literally working my way through it, and it's got some incredible concepts in it and history and knowledge that we've lost for a long time. And then the third is a set of DVDs that he presented about a lecture series of 8 hours that he presented in Michigan in 2009 really helps to give a person a clarity on not just the power of the sword, which we're talking about here with the militia, but the power of the purse and how we can revitalize constitutional money back in the United States. So these are all very important ideas that we're just beginning to touch on tonight, but clearly this whole point of the militia can be revitalized in short order if we could just get enough people to spread the word, talk about this in the public arena, in the public square, if you will. And we've got to revitalize the conversation to get started. We got to get reeducated. We've got to take the time. People have to get off their couches watching the TV and sit down and start, studying material and working together if we're ever going to see these concepts come back. And if we don't do it, frankly, we're toast. In my opinion, that's the way I say it. If we don't do this, we're toast. There's no question that we have a pending paramilitary police state threat, which is getting larger and larger and more pervasive and more threatening every day. And this paramilitary police state threat is the problem that the general government will throw down on us like nothing if we don't have a way to remedy it. I'll defer to my brother.
Everything is being federalized, either outright federalized or from a functional standpoint, it's being federalized. So there is no buffer between the states and the federal government anymore. They basically do what they want to do, and there's not much that the states can do about it. And we have to keep in mind that this is a duty of the states to provide this, and it's our right to demand it.
Kelly here. Hey, why don't you and David explain a little bit more about how the military was to be mustered up instead of a standing army, and what the intent was behind the founding fathers, and how far we've gone away from it.
Well, yeah, I mean the whole purpose. One of the purposes of maintaining the state militias was to ensure that there was not a need to have a strong standing army in the central government. That was one of the main purposes. The other one, which we've already talked about, was in the event that the federal government and their standing army got out of hand and was being abusive to the states or to the people, that the militia would present them with a tough choice. And if we go back to the Federalist Papers, number 27, 28 in particular, Hamilton even lays out a battle plan, and he says, "Look, guys, don't be worried about this standing army of the Feds, because number one, we will fight them if they try to abuse the states. We will fight them like we fought the British. If they attack Massachusetts and are able to control that, then Virginia will rise up, and they'll have to go to Virginia, and we'll keep them running around." But, I mean, it's very clear that the founding fathers looked at we have the checks and balances, and the militia of the states was the check on the coercive power of the standing army of the central government. That was its purpose. And as I said, that's the first time that has ever happened in the history of the world. The militias have never been present to protect the citizens from the sovereign. That's never been their purpose. Only in America was that the purpose of the militia, and now we don't have that protection.
Well, let me ask another question this way, okay? Let's assume that the federal government is, we're going back to the 1800s, say pre-Civil War, all right? We had the War of 1812, for example, okay? The British tried again to invade the hero of New Orleans, Jackson, basically defeated him. But explain how the militia would work, in union, if you will, or in peace with the federal government to fend off foreign invaders. How would that work?
Well, that's a simple. Go ahead, Richard, if you want to go there, I can do it either way. Congress can call forth the militia at any time to repel foreign invasion. That's actually what's covered in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 14, that one of the purposes that Congress has, they can call forth the militia to suppress insurrections, repel invasions. And that's what they did in the War of 1812. They called forth the militias. In fact, that's what they did in the Civil War. Lincoln called forth the militias of the states of the North to deal with the issue of the secession of the South. And in fact, there's a speech that's given by the Secretary of War, Elihu Root, who was the Secretary of War at the time that Teddy Roosevelt put in place the Dick Law, and through Senator Dick of Ohio, that the plan was to change the militia to the National Guard. And in his speech, Elihu Root, which was given to the Interstate Association of the National Guards of the United States 3 months after the Dick Law was passed, and in that speech, he pointed to the fact that the states all had what he called armies, the Army of New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Georgia. He refers to those four armies, and he actually points to the fact that they had functioned ever since the Militia Act of 1792 to the present time, until this change caused by the Dick Law of 1903. It was the Militia Act of 1903, but it's popularly known as the Dick Law of 1903. And in that act, what Congress did was they changed the definition of militia within the federal statutes from the constitutional definition, which is the militia of the several states, as it says in Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, to the militia of the United States, and created in a term of art, which isn't even a constitutional term. But going back to 1812 and to the Civil War, and then come up to the Spanish-American War, just prior to Roosevelt becoming president when McKinley was assassinated, in all three of those cases, militia soldiers or militiamen actually served in our wars. If you've ever gone to Gettysburg, one of the things that you'll notice in the battlefield of Gettysburg is all the monuments to the different companies of militia that died on that battlefield. And it's true, I'm sure it's true at Antietam, though I've never been there. I'm sure it's the same kind of thing. The militias were the operating military units that fought in those wars.
Kelly, I've been to Antietam. I lived in Maryland for a few years. I've been to Antietam. I've been to Gettysburg. And you've got the militia of Virginia versus Massachusetts, the militia of South Carolina versus the militia of Maine, whatever. Okay, you have it's very clear in history, and these monuments, it's there. It was the militias versus the militias. And even the South, when they seceded, they had militias.
Kelly, let me read you a quote by George Washington. You know, we still seem, for some reason, to have a tremendous respect for him as a founding father, first president of the country. And he makes this statement in his document, The Organizing the Militia, in 1790, that he and Henry Knox, who was Secretary of War, wrote at that time. And he says this: it may be laid down as a primary position and the basis of our system. Now, those are pretty strong words, a primary position and the basis of our system, that every citizen who enjoys the protection of a free government owes not only a proportion of his property, but even of his personal services to the defense of it, and consequently that the citizens of America, with a few legal and official exceptions, should be born on the militia rolls, provided with uniform arms, and so far accustomed to the use of them, which means to be trained, by the way, that the total strength of the country might be called forth on any very interesting emergency. Now, Washington understood that the militia was a state organization, not a general government organization. And yet he said that the militias should be, every single citizen should be on the militia rolls. Every single citizen should have a uniform arm, you know, so that we're all using the same ammo, so to speak. And so accustomed to the use of them that the total strength of the country can be called forth on any very interesting emergency. We don't have that at all anymore.
Well, David, why don't you tell a little bit about your experience in Switzerland where they have cantons instead of states?
Well, yeah, I mean, essentially, Washington actually referred to Switzerland as an example of how we should have our militia in the United States. He did that in 1790, pointing to the fact, and by the way, Switzerland has had it since I think it's the 1200 or 1300, somewhere in there, and they still have it. I have a good friend who's Swiss, and he was telling me a few months ago that if there's ever a war in Switzerland, if Switzerland's ever attacked, the entire country goes into the mountains for 3 years. I mean, can you imagine that kind of a system, that they've got it that well organized? He says that every single highway in the country was established and designed, every four-lane highway was designed so that they can put a fully armored plane under every single bridge, and they can take off and land on their as runways on their highways. A tremendous amount of thought has gone into the way they operate. And in every state or canton in Switzerland, and I lived there for a year, they have a system where all the young men at the age of 18, they go away. And in fact, when I was there, I was in school, and my buddies who were in my school, when they were called up, they had no choice. They went and they were conscripted to a duty for 2 weeks out of the summer. They went to a camp to continue their training. In Switzerland, I believe that's 300 days of your adult life if you're in the what they call the army of Switzerland. They don't call it the militia, they call it the army, but it's essentially the militia. You are required to serve 300 days of your life, and every month they have weapons training. It's just a very consistent system. All of the citizens are allocated with a automatic firearm that they keep in their house in a locker in a safe. Interestingly, most people don't realize this, but between the late 1870s and 1903 in the United States, did you know that the federal government actually gave every citizen a weapon, a military rifle in the United States? Did you know that one? I mean, that's something nobody hears these days. But that's
no,
actually
it's
the
not.
Actually
I believe
that.
It. Oh, go
yep.
ahead. Well,
so,
yeah, I believe no. Israel also has a compulsory time in the military as well. I think it's a couple of years. But real quick, before we continue on, I do see that's the top of the hour, and I just want to put up the folks to these shows are archived. And so, of course, you can share the link to other folks to listen to at a later time at their convenience. The show can also be downloaded, in which you can download it to an iPhone or a smartphone or your computer or iPad or whatever, where folks can listen to it in their cars or, just share the information with other people. So that's one way to get this information out to people by going to the link and downloading it. And also, just want to mention that on May the 22nd, we will have Judge Gray on the show, which many of you know, he was the vice presidential candidate with Gary Johnson for the Libertarian Party back in 2012, and he will be with us on May the 22nd, and it is the top of the hour here, as I mentioned, and we do have some callers who on the line who would like to chime in. I have one here from Nebraska, so what I'm going to do is go ahead and you finish up your point, and then I will bring her on. Okay, gentlemen?
Sure. I'd like to make one more comment, and this is just
another piece of
this puzzle that we're trying to put together here. Many people out there think that the National Guard is the militia of the several states, and in fact, interestingly, in the statutes of many of the states actually point to the National Guard as being their militia. The state of North Carolina just a few months ago passed a law where they define the militia of the state of North Carolina, and the first level of the militia is the National Guard of the state of North Carolina. And so we've got this perception that that is the militia, and in practice, that is acting as the militia. But interestingly, in 1982, the United States Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on the Second Amendment to the Constitution actually published a paper in which, after a series of hearings and research that was done by a subcommittee that was headed by Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, there was in this paper they actually make an interesting statement in the next to the last paragraph, and I think it's important that people hear this, because we're really confused. We're really not clear on many things about, you know, how we're supposed to interpret the Constitution in this regard. It says this, and this is the next to the last paragraph. It says that the National Guard is not the militia, with a capital M in quotes, referred to in the Second Amendment, is even clearer today. Congress has organized the National Guard under its power to raise and support armies. That's under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 12, and not under its power to provide for organizing, arming, and discipline the militia, which is Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15. The Congress chose to do this in the interest of organizing reserve military units, which were not limited in deployment by the strictures of our power over the constitutional militia, which can only be called forth to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. The modern National Guard was specifically intended to avoid status as the constitutional militia, a distinction recognized in 10 U.S.C. Section 311A, which is the section of the militia in the United States Code. The point here is Congress did this in 1903 for a specific purpose. They wanted to be able to create a system, as Secretary Elihu Root pointed out, so that we'd be able to deploy our boys to foreign wars. And I'm telling you, I mean, if anybody questions whether that hasn't been something that's been accomplished by this transmogrification, nothing is. Our boys are deployed from the National Guards into foreign wars all the time. In fact, that's the main mechanism for that. But they did it at the sacrifice of our state militia organizations. And ironically, it didn't have to happen that way. We didn't have to get rid of our state militia for Congress to have created some kind of a farm system, if I could kind of coin a term from the Major League Baseball industry. You know, they didn't have to create the farm system by destroying a major establishment of our country, but they had convenient reasons to do so that go way beyond the deployment of our citizens into foreign wars. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out, make sure that that's something that's cleared up. The militia and the National Guard are not the same thing, and we can go into more detail about that if somebody has any other questions, but that's the only other thing I wanted to raise. Richard or Jim, do either of you have something that you wanted to add as well? If not, I'd love to hear the question from this lady in Nebraska.
Okay. And I'm opening up her mic now. Thank you very much for being on hold. And just state your name, and thank you very much for coming to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, my name is Virginia. I'm from Omaha, and I would like to address the group on some of these issues that I've been trying to follow.
Okay,
and seeing
I apologize. Real quick, you have your speakers in the background on. If you could just turn them down while you're...
I'm watching the program, and hold on. Let me see. All of a sudden, there's no mute. Hello?
If you could just turn them on, you know, on the speakers down, maybe.
Oh, okay, I will try something else. Okay, hold on.
Or just move away from them. That's okay. You know, it's not that bad.
Oh, okay, now I decline all volume.
Okay.
I'm an attorney from Nebraska. I've followed these issues longer than any of you have been alive. And I've been in touch with David Callahan, who is one of your speakers.
Go ahead.
Hello? I'm here. Well, we're here. Great. Thank you very much for calling in. Go ahead.
Hi, Virginia. Nice to hear your voice.
Good evening. This is Virginia from Omaha. At least one of you have heard of me before, and I have been following the issue of state militias versus the more problematic private ones, and I do have a little bit of background in law. There is one issue that perhaps you could help explain, among others, is that under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, that the Congress, in the end, controls the state militias, as far as my understanding goes. And in such case, given that our Congress is rather corrupt at present, how do you see that any state militia could be properly governed organized, trained, readied, and so on, particularly when the issue would be against federal tyranny, which Congress itself represents.
Mm-hmm. Well, the states simply have to have a backbone. The citizens of the states need to help their state elected officials to have a backbone and fulfill their requirements under the Constitution and under allegiance and protection.
How is that done again? What exactly do we do?
I think to educate the elected officials and to educate the public, so they understand what the states are required to do, and then to demand that they do them. And part of that is educating the elected officials. I think Dave can address more of the details in that regard, but that's the short of what needs to happen.
Well, yeah,
yes.
But then please, for all of our information, then what are those details, and how should we as the people go about it?
Okay.
To whom do I address what and how?
Okay. I guess one piece of the answer to that is, if the people do not become educated as to their duties and their rights, we're all in trouble. And that seems to be where we are these days. People are looking for someone else to solve this problem instead of realizing that, as Mr. Franklin so aptly put it, we're a republic if we can keep it. And being a republic in the true sense means that the people understand what their roles, duties, and rights are, and they're willing to be accountable and responsible enough to handle them. So what the issue here is, for instance, in the state of Florida where I am, we have this wonderful little provision in the Florida Constitution in Article 8 that says that we have the right to instruct our representatives. And, when I read that the first time, I went, yes, because I have the right to go to my representative and say, listen, you don't have a clarity on this issue of what the militia is supposed to be or how it's been taken from us and it's been transmogrified, and we need to have a conversation. I need to help you understand, and not just me, but a bunch of us are coming to you to help you understand what we need to do to fix this problem.
Public servants, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And see,
what do I as a lone citizen out here against the entire, bureaucracy and everything from city, county through state myself, what is the effective action for me, the process, the procedure to pursue to do this? Because education itself takes a long time. It would seem under the drones and what we've got going on that we need sort of rather effective action, protest, a quasi-peaceful rebellion. But then instruct me precisely what I am to do.
Well, what we're doing, and I'm here in Tallahassee where I live, we've decided to start by building a model. And we think that if we can do that properly, that we can then replicate that model. Essentially, it's a prototype. We're inviting fellow citizens to come and meet together to, first of all, learn some basic fundamental points that we need to all understand. This concept of what does the Declaration of Independence say that we have the right, indeed the duty to do, which is to throw off government that's not effective and replace it with such government that will provide for our security and happiness. And understanding that the militia is a governmental establishment which needs to be revitalized, we need to begin putting together a group of people in our – and the way we're doing it in Florida is we're doing it by legislative district. We're creating, as Dr. Vieira points out in his book, Constitutional Homeland Security, he calls them Citizens Homeland Security Associations. And so we're creating a chapter in every state – in every legislative district in Florida, starting with three in the Tallahassee area, because there's three different legislative districts that all touch on the city. And so we're getting people together in our local CHSA chapter meeting, and we are just taking the time to help all of us understand what the issues are that we are trying to address, and putting together a game plan over the next, you know, by this time next year. We, unfortunately, this isn't something you do real quickly, because, you know, we have to activate enough people to get the attention of the legislature. That's just the way it works. And, you know, unfortunately, I've already been to my legislator once. Two of us went to her, and she essentially has blown us off. But if I go back to her with 200 people, I think she's going to be more willing to say, oh, I think we better do something here. And if we do that in every legislative district in the state of Florida by this time next year, where we've got 50 to 100 people in every legislative district saying the same thing, singing from the same hymn book, if you will, saying the same story, saying we need to revitalize the militia of the state of Florida, and we need there to be a legislative action on this level, I believe that we will make some significant roads. It will no longer be, you know, a situation where we have a few people listening in on a conference call or this kind of a town hall meeting discussion.
Well,
like we're having tonight.
What you're doing is great. What you're doing is great, and it's important. So don't discount this. This could never have happened before.
Right.
I could never have contacted you, and you could not have reached out to people like me. But, I mean, on the ground right now, I'm not sure what to do. We have had contact before.
Here's the short and practical answer to your question. You need to get on to the restoring the Second Amendment or revitalizing the Second Amendment site and sign up.
I've seen it, sir, and I've followed it, and I've got three generations of trophy elk hunters in my family, and the guns were custom made in Fairlock, Austria. There's nobody in America that can say that but me. My mother was a trophy tiger hunter and way past Boone and Crockett Club in India in 64. So, sir, I am well aware of guns, arms, and ammo. My brother was a decorated SOG, SOGS, Deep Secret Service, high-level veteran, and he is dead now. I buried him last week.
Well, you're all my condolences. I'm sorry about your loss.
So, and I'm an attorney, and I've got a Chicago MBA, and I've lived in Switzerland for years, and I know more people than would even let you in the door. Jim Tucker just died, and I've been following the spotlight and Willis Cardo since 1975. Okay,
the answer
I speak many languages,
things.
And I have many degrees, so let's not be patronizing to the little woman
no,
who would
Virginia,
take Hillary
the,
out in a nanosecond.
Virginia, two things that I suggest are the first two steps. One, we must re-educate people in our local communities. And two,
that takes a little time. You know, let's speed load that education.
That begs the question. We can't go faster than getting the people to know what we've got to do. As sad as to say that, if we don't have people on the same page, we will go nowhere. The whole point of this call tonight is people have got to start getting reeducated. We can't get around it. We can't push it quicker than we can, because if we don't have people all on the same page, pulling on the same oars simultaneously, if you're in a crew boat, you wouldn't, and you're not pulling at the same time in the same direction, you won't go anywhere.
I worked for at Culver Military Academy. I was top. Okay.
You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So we must be organized, and we must be reeducated, and then from that get organized. And the reason
we're working
on the other side is because they are organized and we are not.
Hey, Kelly here. I wanted to throw out some thoughts here, if I may. There's another aspect, too, until the state legislatures have an awakening. You know, people can do like you're saying, Community Homeland Security Association, and they can go talk to their sheriff and say, hey, we're available. Sheriff Joe Arpaio has 15,000 people in his posse, so until the legislature set up to the plate, we can get educated, we can get our groups, we can go to the sheriff. Hopefully they're Sheriff Mac type sheriff, and say, hey, we're available. We'll help you. Call on us. That's what
Kelly,
a need action group.
Kelly,
Well, thank you, all good ideas. The only thing, and I don't mean to be critical, because I think what you're doing is super important. It's just that, like, there's this lag of time, and there are people who, yes, everyone's kind of distressed, curious, what. They don't know what to do, but they're playing lotto or watching entertainment sports, and they're lost in that.
Reality shows?
Yeah. And I deal with 5,000 different people a month. I don't think any of you do on a personal basis, okay? And I look them in the eye, and when I see something, and, you know, I'm involved with some ammo purchases, what. And I inquire, you know, and I try to probe, and I try to see the level of understanding and try to engage and try to encourage. It's hardly out there. And
are you putting together a meeting in your local community and inviting people to that meeting to specifically do what we're talking about?
I'm planning my funeral right now, David. I'm sorry, and I hope you can come. That will be a different meeting.
I'll do my best. But my point is that we've got to get people.
You know, things and circumstances are just not good. Okay, but I've been trying, and I've been doing it for years. I mean, if I can go back to the very beginning of Jim Tucker's report on the Bilderberger Association in 1975, I got to jump on you boys. And it took him 38-some years to even get a scratch on what's happening in America and the world. Okay? I've known diplomats. Never mind. The thing is maybe, yes, I agree with you, David, on and the high level, Mr. Dr. Vieira, Sword and Sovereignty, on the state militia. But as I've discussed with you before, the institution of such a program requires such a massive public coordination and effort beyond which I have ever encountered in my life.
Well, let me throw some. I want to throw some questions to David, okay? And I want to throw some comment first. But if we start, say, suppose people are forming a group to learn, okay? Just really learn about the militia. Pretty soon, people are going to come together, and they're going to be, look what the Tea Party did. That's massive numbers, and they affected Congress. So if we start doing that, hey, Sheriff, we're available. Pretty soon, there's going to be in every county, in every, I mean, hopefully small town, but in every area, you got a pocket of people that are going to be politically aware, who are going to wake up their friends, who are going to empower. That's one of the keys that I keep coming back to. We have to empower people with tools so that they will take action, and that'll be a force to be reckoned with as this grows. So I want to move on, David, to some questions, if I may.
Can I get in some comments? Because I called in, so allow me just, and then I'll shut up and go. Okay, it's all very fine and well say to yes, empower, and yes, and do this, and yes, explain, and so on. But if you've got people that are afraid, which is the government purpose, people are being made afraid, and they're being lied to about incidents, about terror, and attacks. And about surveillance and about drones, how are you going to get those very normal, average, good people to be involved? And they are not highly beyond thinking of their own survival, which I can understand because I'm at that level too.
Let me ask you a question, Kelly. I'm not afraid to die.
Go ahead, Virginia, and then I've got a quick question. Is you know, the gentlemen here on the call have you know talked about what they believe could be a good starting point on where we could go. What I'd like to hear is, and I appreciate you calling in and asking the questions, but what would you suggest that people you know do and work for as well? I'd be interested in hearing.
Well, I've thought about it for a long time. Thank you for asking me because I've been involved in a number of these groups, and I think problem is the fractionalization. And I did read something on Vieira that if there was a fusion of these disparate groups, I mean, you know, vis-a-vis the traditional controlled corrupt parties, that there might be a hope. And that, instead of setting up new websites and groups, if you could all pull together, if we could all pull together on certain things. In fact, in Omaha today, there were meetings from the left wing on drones being used in foreign countries to kill innocents. And my understanding is that up to 250 innocents may be killed by one drone under the Obama directives. And Obama is just a continuation, a continuum of the situation. So what can we do? In my mind, if you break it down to the city, the county, the state level initially, there can be a few well-intentioned, capable people that are informed who can follow, say, three on various certain issues, give reports, and request people to show up for action and protest, resistance on the state, the county, and the city level. When it gets to the governmental level, well, maybe the state gets more because of all the various different committees. People need to show up. There was a push for nullification against the federal unconstitutional laws here last year, and it was not followed up, and it was not pushed on.
Well, Virginia, I want to add to this here, because you're right about getting people together, unifying. The Tea Party has actually done this, and some states are getting nullification going because the Tea Party members push their people up into seats in the state legislatures. Michigan has got some amazing stuff going on there. So this is an example for us to follow, to continue to get together. We got to put our fears aside, but we have to empower people. The Tea Party has led the way, if you will, in the short interim victories that they've had. And I went to one last night. I went to one last week. You know, it was a local. These people, they're getting busy. We're getting empowered. We're getting more numbers. And that's what we need to do with this education.
Controlled. Koch, C-O-C-H, Brothers, controlled. This is a problem. But regardless of where it comes from, there are so many different groups and factions, even in my own little community or statewide, that they need to be brought together and pulled together for effective action on at least, you know, state legislative issues. And I would think the city and county level, the sheriff's movement on the Second Amendment with the gun grab was huge, tremendous, inspiring. These are the sorts of things that can lead us towards a state standing militia.
Well, I guess my question, Virginia, is what about what we're talking about tonight does not align with that goal? What all we're saying is we're emphasizing the fact of there is no conversation going on right now about revitalizing the Second Amendment. The NRA is not doing it. Gun Owners of America is not doing it. The Tea Party's not doing it. What we're saying is this must become a upfront, in-your-face, people need to be discussing issue. And that's the whole point of what we're talking about tonight is – And I'd be thrilled if they all said, yeah, this is important enough that we need to start organizing and coming together and focusing on this issue. But the whole point of the reason we're having this conversation.
I promoted it, David. Promoted it. There's a group in Nebraska called Gun Owners of Nebraska. I've talked to their founder and he's a lobbyist, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and I don't disagree with you. I'm just wondering what cart has put in front of the horse on some of these matters, and what is the rallying, cohesive action that can be taken. There are very, very many disturbed, upset people of all different stripes and in all different kinds of groups and factions, and they need to be coordinated.
We're doing it by simply saying this, that the well-regulated militia of the several states needs to be revitalized. And we need this to be raised to a level that the people of this country understand that that must become a priority. That's essentially what our organization is about. And we're providing the tools for people to learn what they need to know to do so. And we're providing a vehicle through the Citizens Homeland Security Association chapters that will be rolling out across the state of Florida and then other states for people to be able to do something with them. And to not, oh, by the way, this isn't just about putting in place a piece of legislation. This is about when these people start coming together, they're going to start looking at their local problems. We're talking about a bottom-up homeland security where the individuals in the community ask the question, what are we going to do if the power grid fails? What are we going to do if we have this pending financial collapse? How are we going to have any economy in our local communities? What are we going to do to prepare for this? In other words, for instance, when Sandy happened in New York, in Staten Island, there was no preparation for that event, so that after the hurricane came through Staten Island, the people are just sitting there going, okay, what do we do now? We're dependent on FEMA because we have no preparation. We didn't do anything to prepare for this event, and now we're stuck having to just deal with it from what is thrown to us, as opposed to the people of the community getting together ahead of time saying, we have an organization now, a Citizens Homeland Security Association chapter, and we get together on a regular basis and we discuss how we're going to provide for our own homeland security and not be dependent on them. And that's what this is all about.
Real quick, Virginia, sorry, but we're going to move on a little bit because we only have about a half hour left of live time. Now,
okay, well, I'll be in touch with David, and I thank you for your thoughts and consideration because it is a huge problem, and I appreciate your trying to move us all forward, unite people, regardless of background.
Hold on. Real quick, I mean, nobody has to hang up or get off the line or anything like that. It just, all I'm saying is, you know, that we only have a half an hour worth of live time. However, as you may or may not know, that the show also goes into extended time, in which, although it's not live, it will be a part of the archive. But the thing about that is, for those listening online, once it goes into the extended time, then they can no longer listen to the show. And so what I'd like to do, and of course they're always welcome if they missed the live portion of the show, is to come back to the show right afterwards where it will be archived and they can listen to the remainder of the extended time. So what I'd like to do is spend the rest of the live time going over some of the things that the gentleman wanted to discuss on the show tonight. And then when we're in a we could continue this part of the conversation when we go into the extended time there. So I'd like to do that. But for those who'd like to listen...
What does that mean to me practically? Do I hang up now or to call back?
No, you just stay on. No, you just stay on the line. And what I'll do is I'll tell the folks, okay, we're into recorded time. And, I mean, it's all recorded. The whole show is recorded and archived. But what happens, and I'll reiterate, is that the people who are listening online, it will drop off. The live show will drop off, and then they'll have to come back later to the link to listen to the archive, which, of course, they're welcome to do so. And for those who would like to listen to the extended version, if we do go in that route, which, as I said many times, we do,
I don't want to just chat. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to bring down drones and combat federal insurgency and paramilitary police state and the economic collapse. You know, I'm just on the get down ground of things here. So.
We could visit those topics. I just want to do that, and it will be in the archives. I just want to do that in the extended part of the show, which I just want to have the, you know, because, you know, these gentlemen were good enough to spend the time to get their information out, and I want to spend the rest of the show doing that, of the live portion, and then once we go into the extended version, we can continue and we can discuss these topics. No need to hang up and call back in to stay on the line.
I'm just supposed to keep the phone going and then just wait to hear. talk to you again.
Just keep the phone going. We'll be going into extended version.
But I want solutions. I want action. And unless you boys can deliver it, I don't want to listen to you.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you're welcome to stay on. You're welcome to hang up. But we are going to we'll touch on new subjects.
I'll plug you in, and I will wait. But you better come up with some good talk. All right, let's do that, Virginia.
Okay. All right.
And solutions.
Let me throw out one.
Go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Bye. Solutions here on Bard's Logic. Go ahead.
Let me throw out one comment.
How do you eat an elephant?
You eat an elephant very slowly, and you begin by the tail.
How would you describe an elephant? Is the greatest question.
That's why I'm able to keep one of the reasons why I keep all the mics open at one time is because one of the problems we really do not have here on the show that I've heard on other shows, even things such as Sean Hannity and shows of that nature, and they have multiple guests on, is they talk. Hold on a second, Virginia. Is the folks talk over each other. That doesn't happen a lot here, and I appreciate to continue that, and I can keep the mics open. So let's defer back to the gentleman.
Talk over is just a little dominant thing. Anyway, sometimes you need to get a word in when idiots are speaking. Anyway, thank you very much, gentlemen. I know you're not complete idiots, but I don't think you're practical. This is what worries me, practicality on the ground.
Hey, Virginia, we got some people here that we really need to move on because we got people who are going to answer the questions, and you're welcome into overtime. That'd be great. I got some questions for David. I think that I want to move this forward.
Yeah, let's move forward. I like giving him hell. Whichever way you want to do it, Virginia,
giving
go ahead, David.
Giving David hell is good.
All right, David.
Well, we'll talk again. I'll just keep my phone on. That's all I know what to do. I don't know what you guys are all about. You got all these super podcast weirdo things. Anyway, all I know is I'm just mad as hell. Okay. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you want to talk to me, you know my number. Ciao.
By the way,
well, big answer to the question, calling in, and you guys can go ahead and answer this.
Yeah, the answer to the question is one bite at a time. And the point, I think what Virginia's frustration is that she's wanting the entire problem solved now. And unfortunately, that can't happen. We have to start by becoming reeducated. Then we move into becoming organized. Then we move into starting to do some investigation. Then we move into providing the means for people to be explaining how to fix the problem. Then we go into issues of making the community aware. From making the community aware, we begin to mobilize, and then we act to put the legislation in place. And that's the series of steps that we must go through to get to an end result that's going to be effective. The problem that many people have is they're not willing to be patient enough to start the process. They want to get to the end goal immediately. And unfortunately, I think she's expressing a frustration that many people experience. But the point is that, as I asked her, what are you doing about this in your community? And that's the whole point here. If we don't all individually make a decision to do something about this in our community, starting with becoming reeducated properly, we're not going to get anywhere. We're going to continue having conversations like this, where all we do is spin wheels. I'm not spinning wheels in Tallahassee. We've got a group of people that started out with three of us. It's up to 15 to 20 at the meetings. We've had a total of 50 people show up in a 15-week period. And let me explain it mathematically, okay? If each of those people simply doubles their number on a regular basis, when we get through 10 to 15 iterations, we're going to have 1,000 people, 2,000 people in Leon County. And those kind of numbers are going to speak volumes. And we're only talking 8 to 10 iterations of the people that are coming to the meetings, become convinced this is the right thing to do, and are passionate about it to get someone else to come. And then those people go find someone else to come. And in 8 iterations of it, 10 iterations of it, essentially we're going to have 2,000 people all working together in just one county in the state of Florida.
Well,
That's the practical way that this will become a reality, in my opinion.
David, this is Jim Condon, Cincinnati again. I just wanted to say that I want to assert or to state that what we're talking about on this show and also in the other points we have at Guardians for Liberty are practical. In other words, if we said to somebody, we want you to spend 40 hours a week doing this or something, then that would be impractical. People are busy. They have jobs. But every point from Guardians, from the revitalizing the Second Amendment to getting involved in your precinct are practical things people can do in, 50 to 200 hours a year. And they're not impractical. So, for instance, to run for precinct, which is the battlefield to try to take back the counties from the Democrat and Republican Party, that might take signatures. Like in Ohio, it takes 5 signatures and probably 20 to 100 hours of your time per year. Well, if people, the problem is people are either one, they've dropped out because they feel the other side's too powerful and they feel like we always lose, or two, they simply are not being misdirected into areas that are not going to bear fruit. So with regard to revitalizing the Second Amendment, we're talking about people getting together, approaching their state legislatures, educating the state legislators, educating the sheriffs, and so on and so forth. These are all practical things that people can do in a few hours per month. And if you have thousands and tens of thousands of people doing them, so these are very practical programs. The problem we have to, we're up against right now, all the groups that are trying to put people on the practical level. For instance, because the Tea Party, because the NRA, because you name it, will not address the secretly counted elections, we had a guy named Romney who I don't believe had any grassroots support. You know, in Iowa they said that Ron Paul was getting 300 to 2,000 people per meeting, and the rest of the candidates could have held all their meetings in a Pizza Hut because they were only getting 5 to 20 people. Yet, so supposedly, though, then Romney went. That's because they were rigging the elections. And so, but as long as people do not bring that up, then they're going to end up supporting a Romney again 4 years from now. So we have to direct them to precinct, to honest elections, to revitalizing the Second Amendment, to honest money, and get them away from spinning their wheels as they have been doing. And so anyway, at the websites of revitalizing the Second Amendment, rt2a.org, and at Guardians for Liberty, you have real practical steps that are within the time frame and the money that people have available. But we got to kind of drop this 30 years where we've been running circles for various reasons, some of which we had to learn what to do. But these are – I just want to say these websites – And I'm not trying to demean others that have good ideas, but these websites are very practical and can fit in the time and the money budget of almost every concerned American.
And right now, folks, I do see there's about a little more than 15 minutes of live time. So if those who want to listen in to the extended version, you're welcome to do so. Just call in at 347-945-7428. To call into us the extended period. But we do have someone on the line who'd like to chime in, and this is Deb from Leon County, Florida. Let me open up your mic here, Deb. Thank you very much for coming to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just want to say hi to David. I'm part of the Leon County group. He's trying to grow. And I just want to say that I'm watching little groups around town. They're prepping and they're protesting. But they're keeping to themselves, sort of. They don't really – what I'm seeing is the government's gotten so radical, and it's getting more radical, what they do and what they propose to do. People are actually scared to do more than just watch, and it's like they're waiting for someone to ring a bell, and then they'll come out with running around like a bunch of disorganized, crazy people trying to do something about it. And I don't know how to get these people to open up and join us, for fear they're going to get put on some list or get followed or get noticed. They're scared of getting noticed. It's not that
good
they're
point.
Not paying attention. They are paying attention. They know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want to get noticed.
Yeah,
well, let me
Kelly here. People need leaders. Leaders. David is being a leader. I think that's really exciting. You know, what can we do? Last week's show, Judy Spadie. Small town Nebraska girl, ended up as a delegate to the GOP convention. And she was saying a few hours here, I can do that. I can a few hours here or there. We need leaders, and people will follow. and it's beautiful when we empower them. Community service, yeah. David. You know, when Hurricane Katrina or Hurricane Sandy happened, that'd be a great outreach, if you will. Militia people got a bunch of boats together. Let's go rescue people. That is a great way. Oh, you're the militia. Never heard of you. What are you about? Come to our meeting. There are so many ways to outreach. We got a whole bunch of questions. We'll have to go into overtime. But there's ways to really bring out a good reputation. And look what the Tea Party did. I just keep saying that.
Well, I know the media has vilified the word militia, just discussing wars going on in other countries, to where you really have to redefine it for people when you mention it these days.
Yep. Debbie, one of the things we're going to be doing shortly, and I know you'll be thrilled about this. In fact, I was on a conversation tonight with a gentleman that's part of this effort. We are going to go to our sheriff, and we're going to educate the sheriff in Dr. Vieira's material. Now, and this is important. I got an email the other day from one of the sheriff lieutenants here in town because I had given her a copy of the brochure for our local organization, which you've seen. And she said she thought it was a very, very well done and very impressive idea. She said to me, you need to get Sheriff Larry Campbell, get an appointment with him and explain to him what you're doing. The sheriff's department will, the people in the sheriff's department will not move forward with this unless the sheriff blesses the effort. Well, so that is now part of our strategy. And in fact, what we can do when we talk to the sheriff, we will be educating him in some significant material as we do in our orientations for our local CHSA chapter. But what we're also going to do is help him to understand his power and the power of Posse Comitatus, and how he can begin, and Richard, you might want to address this a little bit here in the last few minutes, the whole issue of Posse Comitatus versus the militia and how the two of those dovetail to one another, because, frankly, the same people that are part of your Posse Comitatus are the same people who become part of the militia when it is revitalized in the state. It's just that the Posse Comitatus is a civil organization or a civic organization, whereas the militia is a military organization within the state. The Posse Comitatus is on the county level, and the militia is organized from the state down. And so these are practical pieces of the picture, and this is another part of, you know how I said originally that there are little parts of the puzzle that we're starting to put together, we're starting to get pieces of it? Well, these are a couple of the pieces that will come together in time. But again, I must come back to that same point, and I sound like a one string on the guitar. We've got to get enough people to start coming out and getting together to begin to organize and put together the right functions within our local chapter to do the different pieces of the work that are going to have to be done if we're going to be effective here in Leon County.
Definitely. I try to bring an extra person every time I come to one of your meetings. That's what I try
appreciate
to do.
It very much.
And I hope,
appreciate it very much.
Hope they keep coming back, you know, and that they do the same.
Yep. Well, we're just going to keep working at it until they do. And, you know, we're going to, you know, the thing is that we start small, but it will become like a snowball effect. Over time, those people that came will start coming back. They'll be bringing others with them. This is going to become much more popular when we begin to get the people on the radio programs in town to start actually agreeing that this is something that ought to be done. The newspaper has put in an article from us. You know, you crawl before you walk and you walk before you run. That's part of our theme of how we're working. So, you know, I thank you for being part of it, and I thank you for, you know, continuing to talk about it with your friends. And the other piece is everything we're doing is legal. Everything that we're doing is legitimate. And so in time, it's got to move forward and become something that people will start to grasp, because it's clearly the constitutional position. It's clearly the provisions that the founding fathers put in place that we just need to continue to work on and move forward on.
I like something that you said at one of the meetings, that we got in this position by letting the opposition take bite after bite after bite, nibble after nibble.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing to do is to do it back in the same direction, counter lobby.
Yep, exactly.
I think it's a fabulous idea, and I don't think there's been nearly enough of it going on. People are complacent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
well, thank you.
I'm with
thank
you, and
you
I'll hopefully see you tomorrow night.
Okay, yes, looking forward to it. This is meeting 16 that we're having tomorrow night. It's really fantastic.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Debbie, for sharing.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you very
Richard.
Much for coming to the show. gentlemen, I see we got about 10 minutes left here. Be good for someone else calling in. It's Rosie. She was in the chat, and thank you very much for your contributions in the chat as well, Rosie. But I also see you on the line, so I'm going to open your mic. Thank you very much for coming to the show. Go ahead.
Glad to be here. I first heard about this from Walter Reddy, believe it or not, out of Connecticut, who is practically my neighbor. And I heard him call into Alex Jones some years back to talk about this, and I just had, and I found him, you know, in the area, and I was attracted to this as somebody who was not a gun enthusiast and didn't have many skills, basically, who was nanny stated, and I thought this is exactly perfect for somebody who's one of the people who's going to be left behind in an emergency. And so the people I talk to who are more like me, this should be very appealing to them, because if you don't have the skills to be self-sufficient, wouldn't you want to be part of a more organized, faction rather than have everything be in chaos? And not only that, people who say that they don't like guns, it's not that they don't like guns. It's that they don't want to be bothered with the law. They'd rather have with the enforcement. They'd rather have someone else just take care of it. So they just need to understand how it all works and what a better system would be. Because we don't want a monopoly on food. We don't want a monopoly on corporatism. But why would we want a monopoly on force? And that's the kind of thing that I try to teach people. And you know what? I went to a food show recently, and every person who had a booth, whether it was a gardener or somebody who was into healthy food and was making a presentation, every one of them loved the idea of the well-regulated militia. And I explained it to them in one sentence, and they got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're right. You know, there's a really interesting quote that Dr. Guerra has in his book, Constitutional Homeland Security, and I think it really speaks to what you're saying. You see, all we want to do is to provide the means within our local communities to be able to have homeland security from the bottom up. That's all we're really talking about. This top-down, out of Washington, D.C., trying to tell us what to do in a little rinky-dink town somewhere in the country doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. And so what we're attempting to do here is to show that we can restore some aspect of constitutionalism to contemporary America in our individual localities. And Dr. Vieira says this on page 93. He says, too many patriots assume that restoring any aspect of constitutionalism to contemporary America is well nigh impossible because the tasks of proselytizing and organizing their country as a whole are too difficult. This mistakes the problem at hand. To begin the process of returning America to her constitutional fundamentals, patriots do not need to recruit most Americans most everywhere, but only enough Americans somewhere to prove the theory, establish the practice, and above all, set a successful example. And if the sight of some Americans actually reestablishing self-government in their own locality by themselves does not animate many more Americans to join in that endeavor in theirs, then America is moribund, or nearly dead is what moribund means. And so the point here is all we're wanting to do is show some, if we can just show somewhere in this country, it could be in Connecticut, it could be in Florida, it could be in New Hampshire, it could be in Alaska or anywhere, it doesn't matter. We can show that we can bring the people together in our locale and get them to organize together, as you're saying, you know, where we all, you know, the ones that, you know, have guns and think that that's valuable and those that don't want to touch a gun, but we all get together and we simply organize ourselves to solve our own problems and deal with these issues of homeland security, then that will actually turn into a wildfire across the country. People will go, oh, wow, we can do this. That's how I think that this is going to actually expand throughout the whole country.
David,
Real quick, before you add, because I do see I only have about 5 minutes left of live time. For those who'd like to listen into the extended version, call in 347-945-7428. And if not, thank you very much for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk. And hopefully, if you don't stay for the live show, you come back again to listen to the archive and the extended version. Also, if you would, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, where you can also find links to freeandequal.org, as well as the United We Stand Festival, which is being held on June 22nd in Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas. So please check that out. You can also find United We Stand Festival on Facebook as well. So for all those not going to stay for the extended version, thank you very much for coming to the show. I hope you come back again. And also, if you're new here and you are a grassroots, conservative, liberty-minded folk and you want to hear more from the show, then please consider following it by going to the Blog Talk Radio homepage for the show, and under the show's icon is a little follow button, and you will get email updates on when the show is going to be airing. So thank you very much again. Have a good night and take care. I will bring it back to you, Kelly. And also for those, if they'd like to chime in, you can also push the 1 button on your phone dial, and that will let me know that you'd like to chime in. Or, of course, you can leave a message to me in the chat, or for those who are also on Facebook and can message me from there as well. Thank you, Kelly. I apologize for the interruption. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's fine. I got a whole bunch of questions I want to ask David and crew when we get into overtime. But first of all, I wanted to, the lady from Connecticut, I want to hear her one sentence again that attracts people into this concept.
Well, first of all, it's efficient. And think about the small amount of time everybody overall would have to contribute. I just believe that the urgency isn't quite there yet, and that's why people are still running after their own individual solutions about everything. And I believe that it would do away with all of those separate areas of activism, because this would just stop it in its tracks. A lot of the problems, such as these raids on organic farms, and you know, I have a lot of friends who are trying to work for GMO labeling, and I mean, well, we'd have the freedom to do whatever we wanted if we had the well-regulated militia. I like the efficiency of it, and I think a lot of other people would, and I really don't think it's about guns at all. It's about a mindset. It's really about just presenting it the way it's supposed to be presented. As it's a much more multifaceted system than than it's, you know, been given credit for.
So what you're saying is getting people in the community to work together for whatever comes their way.
Yeah, I mean, it's forever. It's really, I don't really see how, you know, how it doesn't, it affects every aspect of our lives. Whatever it is that we are interested in setting straight, it touches on everything.
And
you
know,
it has nothing to do with, you know, it's the leadership that is demagoguing the whole gun aspect of it. And
When Abraham Lincoln, let me just say this, when Abraham Lincoln was speaking in his Gettysburg address to the people there on the battlefield, he ended his speech by talking about his concern that the government of the people, by the people, and for the people would not perish from the earth. He was actually pointing to those militias when he was making that statement. Yes, physically, the dead men in that field were members of their militias. And in his mind, I am absolutely certain that he was identifying the government of the people, by the people, and for the people, because that was the warp and woof of it at the time. That was, the militia was the only part of the government of the United States at the time which was represented actually by the people of the country.
Oh, my gosh. I've memorized the Gettysburg Address. And he does a juxtaposition where he says, "We have come here to dedicate this field as the final resting place for those who fought so bravely. But we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. These brave men fighting and dying have hallowed it far more than our ability to add or detract. These brave men." And he was referring implicitly in the words, obviously, to the militias.
Yes. Yes. And as was just pointed out by Rosie, it's much broader. The militia of the several states was the politic, the body politic of the American people. And we've lost that over the last 100 years. That's what we want to put back, is the body politic of every single community and every single county and every single state of our country. That's what this is all about.
I believe we can, we can reach our highest human potential through this because of the spirit of community we lost. Just think about that aspect alone.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make mention that there's a second Facebook page that Walter Reddy and I just started called Your Precinct Project. That's on Facebook as of yesterday.
Okay. David and everyone, this is Jim Conda Jr. in Ohio. I'm going to have to leave in a second. But I wanted to end with this, which I forgot to mention earlier. We're talking about community popping up in every – we need it to pop up in every county. We need patriots in every county quickly to start working together on revitalizing the Second Amendment, precinct, honest election. And a fellow named Keith Broders has started the Constitution Club, where he already has a page created for every county in the United States where people can come together and start talking. There can be Guardians for Liberty groups. There can be revitalizing the Second Amendment groups, Oath Keepers groups, Tea Party groups. It's very ingenious to help everyone come in contact with each other and then meet face-to-face in your county. So that's at constitutionclub.ning.com. And David, maybe we another time could get Keith on and do a show, because between the revitalizing the Second Amendment and the precinct and the honest elections and getting people in each county, all 3,000 counties, to start meeting each other and working together, we can turn around the country. But we got to focus people on action that will work. And I contend that what you're doing with we're doing with revitalizing the Second Amendment and the seven principles as guardians for liberty, these principles will work. And if we focus everyone to do these things in this way, then believe me, there will be emergency meetings at the Waldorf Astoria in London and D.C. What are we going to do to stop these people? But we've got to focus people and quit letting certain organizations, which I won't name right now, running them in circles where they always end up supporting the Romney or the McCain because they don't realize the system is rigged to leave them with that's the only alternative they're going to have by time the moment of truth comes. So thanks for including me tonight, everybody.
Thanks, Jim. We'll be in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for coming, Jim. I really appreciate you coming to the show and giving you your input. And also, I do see here that you are local, so I definitely would like to contact you sometime
are
after
you in
the show.
Are you in Cincinnati?
I won't say what city, but
you're nearby.
I am nearby.
You're in Ohio. Okay, call me anytime, or call David and get my number and call me anytime. Yeah.
Okay, great. And then we'll schedule some other shows on this. And take care.
Thank you. Thank everybody. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye. Yeah, I'm reluctant to give the city out because during the elections it just got kind of crazy. I opted out of doing that. So, if anybody was wondering,
we're on the extended time of the show, right?
We are now the extended time, and I like to be a man of my word, and so I did tell Virginia if she'd like to chime in and talk about some things, but of course we want to give people the time to speak as well. So Virginia, if you'd like to add anything, since we are in the extended version, let's go ahead. But first we'll let the gentleman finish off, and then you. Okay, Virginia, if you're still there. I see you're still on the line. Wait a minute. Yep, I see you're still on the line, so you're welcome to chime in. Go ahead, Ed. Nope, somebody hung up. It sounds like 203. I'm still on the line.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, is this an actual human contact?
This is, yes. Is this Virginia?
Yeah.
Okay.
To your chatter forever. I've been involved with this in 40 years, and my father.
Hold on a second. I'm having want to hear so other people's from the mics. Everyone else back on the line here?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, okay.
Who is everyone else?
Oh well, we've got David Callahan on, and Richard. You still there?
Yes.
Oh, this Richard Fry, the attorney.
And then Kelly.
Hello, Richard. I'm also an attorney, but I'm not constitutional as much as you. And then is there this David Condit?
Yeah, well,
oh, Jim
no, it was Jim Condit. He had to go for the evening. So let's.
Hey, Jim. Let me give you some background. Way before the spotlight even started, my father was involved with Willis Carto and Lo P. Oliver. So. In the 1960s, I heard how Marilyn Monroe was killed by the Kennedys. So,
okay, well, let's go ahead.
Okay, but back to the program. But no,
right.
It's not huge because I get a lot of crap from people here who are like, oh, gosh, chemtrails, Bilderberger. And I'm like, let's jump back like 40 years to my background. They don't know. Robert Forson, I knew and met, and yada, yada. Anyway, so how are you guys? And, you put on a good program. I'm glad that there is a discussion or debate out there in America. That is the most important thing. You thrilled me on that. My hats are off to you. Oh.
So what about, you mentioned earlier about solutions, and I know we briefly talked about drones and things of that nature. And so, gentlemen, she brought that up. So in what way maybe we could address the drone issue in which the well-regulated militias would address that?
How is it going to happen? It's pretty complex.
Well, that's what I'm asking the gentleman because you brought that up earlier.
It's a problem.
Kelly or David or Richard want to address that? Go ahead, Jack.
Go ahead, Richard. Were you about to chime in? I can. I have a comment. Again, this comes down to what has to happen as the first and second phase of things. People need to be made aware that we need to put back the governmental organization of the militia of the several states, the way that it is constitutionally defined. People need to understand that concept first. If we don't have that concept, then we can't do anything practically to do so. Once we have that concept in people's minds, then we have to become organized. The reason that the other side is winning is because they are organized and we are not. For example, Katrina. In Katrina, and just let me finish the thesis, and then we can have a debate about it.
Hold on a second. Let him finish. I really hate to mute anybody's mic.
No,
let's go ahead and have him finish. Go ahead.
No,
okay.
Please.
The thesis is there were 800 people in New Orleans who had their arms taken from them by a very smart number of police power, sheriffs in the area, simply because those sheriffs were of a larger number and more organized than the individuals who had their guns taken. Very simple, basic principle. In other words, the powers that be are organized. And the thing that they did with the Dick Act of 1903, the Militia Act of 1914, Militia Act of 1916, the Militia Act of 1933, is they changed the organizations. They took away the state power of militia by convincing the states that they needed to repoint their organizations toward the National Guard. When they did that, they took away the duty of the individual citizen to be armed and accoutred for a duty of service, and took away their ability to be organized with other members of their community to fulfill that function. How did they do that? By the Militia Act of 1914. In the Dick Act of 1903, they created two different groups, the Organized Militia of the United States, made up of the National Guard and the Naval Militia, and the Reserve Militia, which was everyone else who could be a member of the National Guard but was not. Then in 1914, they then changed the laws again to convince all the states to identify two different categories of militia. again, keeping the organized militia as the same entity, the National Guard and the Naval Militia, and changing the name of the Reserve Militia to the Unorganized Militia of the United States, and putting all of those same individuals into that camp, so that now you have a group of people.
Who is behind this?
Congress.
I'm sorry. Yeah, okay.
Congress.
Okay, Congress.
Congress was behind this. But what they did, here's what they did, Virginia. It's simple. They said to the people, to the legislators of the states, they said, in order for you to receive federal funding to fund your National Guard, you must conform your laws to point to the National Guard and away from the militia of the state. When they did that, they took away any practical means. Again, that question of practical. The practical means for the people to be organized in their communities was removed. You no longer had the individual citizen being armed and accoutred for duty of service to the state. It was just a select militia. That's the term. And the Founding Fathers actually coined that term to say that that was a part of the military establishment, not a part of the militias.
Okay, time out, guys.
I want to ask some questions here, Robert, if I may.
Go ahead real quick. I mean, not real quick.
Okay.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Here's one. How is a militia leader elected? I mean, how does that work locally?
Well, frankly, that's determined by the state laws. The state laws determine how the officers are appointed within the state. In many cases, there was an election. For instance, I think in Rhode Island, the statutes point to the fact that the members of the militia were elected by the people from the lowest level up to a certain level, probably the captain or major, and then the upper level officers were appointed by the legislature. So it totally depends. In fact, the point here is that in the Constitution, it's very clear in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15, that the appointment of officers is left to the states. And the states, by their own statutes, define how those appointments take place. So much of the regulation that's in the state laws defines how all of those structures are put in place, how the militia is organized by, you know, battalions or companies or squadrons or whatever. But again, the Congress is supposed to define the organizing, the arming, and the
Congress.
However, hang on. Their duty is to provide how the structures are defined, leaving it to the states to train.
Okay, so I want to summarize here. So the Congress had the authority to leave it to the states, and that was the intent. The states would go ahead and make the regulations. The local people would elect people, so obviously you have local accountability. I want to go more into accountability. What type of militia discipline was available?
Well, the discipline's the same as the uniform standards of military conduct. They're the same standards.
Okay.
In other words, you're under the military code when you're acting within a militia function at the state level, just like you would if you were in a federal level as a soldier. And so,
who calls them up? Excuse me. Who calls them up? I'm confused on this. Is this a governor or is it out of Congress?
No, the governor does. Remember.
All right. That does
militia,
not seem to be reflected in Article 1, Section 8.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
No, it says Congress. It says Congress.
No, it says Congress will provide for organizing. In other words, they provide the statutory the statutes for how are we supposed to organize at the state level. The militia is a state organization. It doesn't say a well-regulated militia being necessary to a free country. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to a free state. The militia is a state organization.
The governor calls up. The governor, in a way, organizes, huh?
Yeah, yes. Well, the governor calls
up. What are our governors and how are they ruled and what are they going to do? And so if it's on state level, what do I do tomorrow to effectuate this?
Effectuate what?
What do I do tomorrow to effectuate that the governor of Nebraska implement this?
Well, the problem is, and Virginia, this is what Dr. Vieira points out in his book very, very well, the 2,300-page one. Unfortunately, it's a lot of pages because we've got things all screwed up. But the problem is that
Tragedy and Hope, and this is big, and I'm tired of reading.
the statute.
Okay, but go ahead. Give me marching orders. Do you see what I mean? Like, what the hell is anybody supposed to do?
Here's the problem. The problem is that the laws have been changed. The structure, the Congress, here's what Congress did. Congress went to Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, which says that no state shall, without the consent of Congress, keep troops in times of peace. But what Congress did was they put in place a system to keep troops in times of peace and gave the states permission to do so. That's what the National Guard is.
Yeah.
And they changed the laws. They transmogrified the laws so that we now have the National Guard substituted in place of the militia.
Yeah,
David,
I understand
David, I got another
subversion.
Question for you, David, okay? Here's another question. Can the sheriff arrest militia members? Like if the militia gets out of line or something?
Not directly in their function as militia, no. The militia,
not
militia,
a state militia.
No.
A private militia, yes.
But back up. Private militias are not a constitutional militia. Up until 1903, you would not even have thought of talking about a private militia. There was no such thing prior to 1903. And the reason that they came about was strictly because of this misnomer of the unorganized militia. The militia is an organization. It is actually organized. So when you call something an unorganized organized, you've created an oxymoron. It's a misnomer.
Well, here's where I'm going with this question, David. Is that I would, you know, I'm big on the grand jury and research that all, blah, blah, blah. I would bet with the grand jury indictment, the sheriff can go and arrest a militia member, which is another form of accountability. Next question, can a militia arrest the sheriff?
Well, you're raising a question here. Arrest the sheriff, the militia constitutionally has the duty to execute the laws of the state. That's their duty, okay? The question is, when is it necessary for the militia to come into play? They're going to come into play when there's a clear violation of law in which they have the authority to intervene. Richard, are you still on the line?
Yes.
You might want to address this a little bit. You might have some answers in this regard. Where is the authority of the militia in general? What will the militia interact with in light of this issue where in the Constitution it says that when they're called into the called forth by Congress, they execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, repel invasions? How does this relate back to the state level of their authority? Can you address that?
Well, they're not law enforcement. They are strictly military, and you're not talking about enforcing laws. You're talking about executing laws, and you're talking about a situation where there's widespread lawlessness that's going on, where there's a collapse of the civil authority. So they certainly would not quote unquote arrest a sheriff or anybody else.
Well, let me throw something out to you because I'm big on accountability. What's going on? Well, many years back, there was a citizen who submitted an arrest warrant for the district attorney. The district attorney went out the fire escape. Grand jury got involved and indicted him and took care of that. But I would suspect most states have a citizen's arrest clause. And the only problem with that is if you don't know what you're doing for false arrest, you can go to jail for that. Or you can also face a civil suit. So I would suspect under the state laws of citizen arrest, if need be, they could take care of the sheriff. We talked about, next question, can a militia help with, say, Katrina or Hurricane Sandy? That's great outreach. Is it a good idea for militia groups to do community service? Another question I had was foreign wars, okay? When the structure of the state militias, and they still have it somewhat, Obama wants to send more troops to Afghanistan, wherever, he calls up the governor calls up the National Guard, and send them over. But in foreign wars, regarding foreign wars, could the states refuse, that would be the governor, could the state refuse to send militia members?
Yeah, but they can't refuse to send the National Guard.
Oh, that's interesting, because that would end the foreign wars. Because the manpower, the states can just say, we ain't doing it. But under the National Guard, they can.
The National Guard are federal troops. They take a dual oath, and they answer directly to the president. So they absolutely are not the militia. That's one of the reasons that you know they're not the militia. They can the militia is under the training of the governor, under the states. The National Guard, I mean, we got into this back in the 60s and 70s when they were sending the National Guard down to South America to train to go to Vietnam. And we had three or four governors that objected to that. Well, they didn't have a basis to object because it wasn't the militia. They were federal troops.
Right. So if it was the militia, they could have refused to send troops
militia.
To foreign wars.
Remember what I quoted earlier tonight, Kelly, when I quoted from that paragraph out of the United States Senate Judiciary Subcommittee? They made the statement that the National Guard is not the militia referred to in the Second Amendment because the National Guard was organized under the power to raise and support armies and not under its power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. This Congress chose to do in the interest of organizing reserve military units, which were not limited in deployment by the strictures of our power over the constitutional militia. Okay, because the only powers that the general government has over the militia is to call them forth to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasion. They don't have a power to establish to deploy them to foreign wars. That is not.
Oh my gosh!
I am also
an attorney of some 30 years experience. Although it's not in this area.
Go ahead, Virginia, real quick. Go ahead.
Well, I think this is a very important discussion, and I'm very enlightened, and I would like it to continue. And it very much concerns me, this issue of the National Guard, and I am most horribly concerned about the federal government imposition through DHS, TSA, you know, and the fusion centers. And the FEMA camps and all the things that are going on. I'm all happy to discuss the possibility of an original constitutional principle of the standing state militia. I'm Mother Batheric, but at the same time, it's not in our conscience of history. We don't understand it. David understands the principles. He's read more of Vieira. I don't see how it's going to happen on the ground, and I'm very afraid we do not have time. Gentlemen, I'm very afraid we do not have time.
My response to that is, oh, well, then we don't have time. But the point is, that doesn't mean we don't try simply because we don't think we have time. We have
There was a congressman from Texas. His name was Rick Green. He was in the state legislature there. He said, look, actions are ours, results are God's. I heard a story in the 80s here in Siskiyou County where they organized a militia. 500 people showed up. And the next time the FBI showed up, and then the third time it was pretty much done. But they registered with the state, and they were legitimate. And back then they were thinking, no, there's not enough time. They're all going to come get us. When are they going to come get us? They want us to give up. The powers that be want us to give up. I mean, that's why we got to keep on that simple theme: actions are ours, results are God's.
Yep. We may not have time, but we have to do it anyway. That's the bottom line. We don't have a choice.
Well, I've been doing it, and I've been doing it probably before a lot of you were born.
Okay.
So it's not new to me. It's just like. I cannot find people who want to coordinate, who want to understand, who want to think, who want to participate, who want to do much of anything.
That's the great news why we're having this talk, because when we point out the attractive features, the accountability, the way it works, this is awesome. I mean, one of the things I like about situations like, now we need DHS and all this stuff, we need, whatever, okay, federal level. We don't need that if we had a well-regulated militia. And the state, in times of, say, the war on terror, the state could actually fund a lot of militia people, who, again, locally elected, and they could go ahead and they could investigate, even work with the feds. They're being paid. And guess what? They got a whole bunch of manpower if they need it. There are attractive features, and that's the whole point of this conversation tonight, is to plan out the attractive features. We attract people, we get numbers, we'll be a political force to be reckoned with. Attraction. That is our starting point.
Yeah. And same for 1,000 other groups. I mean, I don't mean to be cynical. I'm just like realistic, because I've been butting my head against this for like forever. Maybe you've heard of Jim Tucker, who just died in the spotlight. I was there in 1975 when he was doing that. It took him almost 40 years to have a breakthrough, and that was only through Alex Jones's publications.
Right. Well, here's the good news with Tucker and other men who have gone before us as leaders. They are waking up. Dozens of people, old-timers. We had the constitutional thing 10 o'clock on Tuesdays, and we have lunch together. And these old-timers kind of took me under their wing. They woke me up more than I wanted to be. Jim Conner, the guys here, they are still having an influence. And look at the numbers just through the Internet. Oh, my gosh, we're having an awakening. So
Condit is there. Did you meet Robert Forreson, Mr. Condit? Did you know
Mr. Condit? He had to leave for the evening. If you're going to direct the question to him, he's no longer here on the show tonight.
All right. Everything he's written and published about, I was dealing with in short pants. So I'm not a newbie. But the whole world is in crisis. And I love this republic. I don't know about you men, but I swore an oath, I guess Mr. Fry did as well, to support the Constitution. I took it seriously. My brother, who just died, took it seriously. He was a highly decorated Green Beret Studies Observation Group in Vietnam. He was misled because the Gulf of Tonkin was a lie. My father knew Pearl Harbor and World War II were a lie. We knew World War I were a lie. We knew the Spain bombing was a lie.
Virginia, here's the good news. There's so many people are awakened. You know, you were awakened by talking to other people. We're waking people up, and the Internet is a great tool. Alex Jones, look what he said. I mean, we keep going. Today I talked to a guy, and we couldn't stop talking to each other. He's a libertarian, registered libertarian like me. We could have talked for hours, and he's 23. Oh, my gosh. How in the world did this happen that we keep fighting and fighting? You know, here's some more revisionist history. In 1820, three socialists showed up in Congress and said, we're taking over, and Congress just walked away. That's revisionist history. But generation to generation, we've been fighting. And we're still sustaining an organ weaker. So
guys. It has to stop. I want to do what I can do. I've tried to promote even the people I knew, the Ron Paulers, the Republican Liberty Caucus, the Educators of Liberties. They won't discuss the issue of a state militia. And they keep thinking it's a private militia, you know?
Because they don't understand it. They don't understand it. That's why David's here.
Well, no, but, you know, I don't have much time to explain something I don't understand. And I'm trying. I keep learning, and I'm working on it. But we have nullification. Gosh, if we could have just some nullification here, it would be great. In the state of Nebraska, 32 others have imposed nullification against onerous, unconstitutional laws. For God's sakes. Because if the militia is to stand for anything, it's to stand against that force.
Let me ask you a question, Virginia, just to see if we've made any progress at all. Okay, I'm a teacher. I'm going to give a true-false quiz.
Oh, shit.
Is the militia of the state true or false? The militia of the state is a private organization.
No. False.
Correct. Good. Were you clear on that before tonight?
Yeah, I've been reading it, and I went back. It's not private. I've never been for this private stuff, except I'll shoot any bugger that crosses me, period.
Well, that has nothing – that, in other words, we know – one thing that we've clarified tonight on this show is that militias the adult Boy Scouts playing Army in the Woods with guns and camouflage are not militia, whatever they are.
No. The whole thing after Ruby Ridge was a wrong direction.
Correct.
And that's why they were destroyed. But I followed all that.
Okay.
And I was Senator John Tower was my good friend. The designate for the Defense Department. I have his correspondence and his letters. He was my good friend. That was the level I was dealing on and with prior to Ruby Ridge. Okay.
All I'm trying to say is we have to re-educate the people to understand what is and is not true constitutionally and governmentally. That has to be the first step.
And then the media as well, of course. You know, what does the media, especially the left-leaning media, what do they concentrate on when you hear about militias? They only concentrate on, you know, those of the private militia and those, of course, and not even the good. And I'm not saying all private militias are bad. I'm just saying that the ones that are concentrated on are the ones of those of that nature. And that's what, of course, since they've got a louder voice right now, because, you know, but that's changing, and that's changing with shows like this and the social media and things of that nature. People, you know, doing their own research, that's something that we promote a lot here on the show, is for people to, you know, not necessarily even go to your mainstream media, and sometimes even your so-called conservative media, sometimes they can't even be trusted, but to do your own research, and, of course, look where, you know, you're getting the information from.
Well, but yes, I mean, I dealt with this issue on the state militias, David, after you and I discussed it, and you read my little query on that, and you and Mr. Fry were very kind to respond in detail, and I passed it on to Liberty groups here, and they were all very confused. They thought it was like the old private militias who got basically arrested in the 90s.
Well, then they didn't read it correctly, because we made it very clear in that document that we were not talking about private militias. And if they misunderstood it, then that's too bad because
people still get locked up, and the FBI doesn't care anyway, as we've noticed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it gets a bit problematic, and I think the distinction needs to be made very clearly. And it's a little hard for me because I haven't read as much as you, and you are very well spoken, I have to say. I mean, you're a great promoter, a great speaker, and you're more versed in the details on these issues than I. And so I defer to you, and I think you have great potential for influence on these matters. But I'm a little ham-handed out here, and I'm trying the best as I can.
I would really encourage you, and I know that you fight this, but I would really encourage you to get Dr. Vieira's book, and even if you read it 20 pages a day, read through that book and get the clarity on the constitutional history of the militia of the several states that he outlines in that book. It's helped me tremendously, and I'm literally only on page 80 of that book. It's helped, but it's already influenced my mind, and the concepts that are being presented there are essential for us to be able to help other people to understand what this is about. You're capable of doing it. I know you are. It's not a question. I know it may take a commitment and some devotion to it. I'm saying this not only to you, Virginia, but everyone that's on the call. If we're going to affect change, we have got to get proper information. Fortunately, we don't have to rebuild the wheel. It's all been, I mean, a lot of the research. Richard, you've said in the past, just a few weeks ago, that you believe that Edwin Vieira's work, The Sword and Sovereignty, is one of the most well-written treatises on a constitutional subject you've ever read. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think he's done an excellent job on it.
Yeah, and Constitutional Homeland Security is a workbook.
I've worked out. But you see, I'm kind of dying. You know, my circumstances are so low and base that no, you can't understand. I don't need to go into it. But I've read everything. I'm so highly educated. I can't even talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's problematic, and I do have an in with some people. And I could go to a former governor, although she's rather trapped in the old Republican Party, although I know she's worried about things. And maybe there are some things I can do. I mean, I'm really not sort of a grassroots sort of person. We all have our different, you know, levers of function or fortes, and I have to pick and choose mine where I present all this.
Well, frankly,
and
that might be okay.
Kelly, here, I want to throw some things out again. You know, what's how you're feeling right now, I kind of understand. You know, it's frustrating. But, you know, when we hook up with other people, all right, and when we communicate eloquently, when we feel empowered, when we feel connected, and Barge Logic has done, Robert's done a great job to do this for quite some time, but when we feel connected, that fuels the empowerment. We go out and get more people. So the Tea Party did. And so that's emotional. That's what I'm saying. This movement, education is not just mental. It's also emotional. As long as we're connecting with like-minded people, and David keeps growing his organization, we will have that connectedness that will bring about the change just like the Tea Party did. So it just takes time.
Well, I guess, again, what am I to do tomorrow? You know, it's like, I've talked to Ginger.
No, here's what I would suggest. I would suggest that you take what little bit you do know and you start sharing that with the people on whatever level you communicate. It doesn't hurt that you talk to the former governor and explain to her a little bit about what's been going on. I'd love to have you talk to her and have her contact me and contact our board and let us explain to her what we believe has happened so that she has a better clarity on what's going on. The only way that this is ever going to work is if the people of this country become awakened to what has happened. It's taking the little steps. We're crawling before we walk, and we're going to walk before we run. But while we're crawling along, if we can bring a few people along while we're crawling along, that's fine too, because this is a reawakening movement. This is helping people understand something that's been hidden. As Dr. Vera says, it's been hidden underneath the paper, and we've got to lift the paper back up to see it again. It's really what the problem is. And so if you've got connections, go to your connections and communicate with those people and share, look at, there's some people that are figuring out some things that we have not really understood for a long time. And these people have something to say that this country has got to understand if we're going to be able to prepare for the SHTF that is coming. And
SHTF?
You know what SHTF is? Something hitting the fan that starts with an S. Okay. And the bottom line is the problem that's coming is not going to go away unless we begin to take steps to help people understand from the bottom to the top. People that, you know, unfortunately, the ones that are the powers that be, they've got their own agenda. But there's others who aren't in that camp who certainly, if they understood what's going on, they would bring resources to the table to help us to start solving this problem. And so, and you know what? It's like Kelly said. There's an old picture that when I was a production control manager when I was in my early 20s in a little company in Hackensack, New Jersey. And my boss boss had a picture up on his wall. And it was a Norman Rockwell painting of this guy in a rowboat. And out of the middle of the rowboat, there's coming this big spout of water. And he's looking at it, panicking, rowing as fast as he can. And off in the distance, you see the shoreline. And on the top of the picture, it says, "Pray toward heaven." And under the picture, it says, "Row toward shore." And that picture's always stuck in my mind because, you know, all that any of us can do, we're just normal people. Nobody, there really is no such thing as a person that's an exceptional person that's better than everybody else. We all have
going
the same blood
the
flowing through our veins.
But we
breathe the same air. We have the same blood flowing through our veins. We got to eat food to survive. We've got to live in a society where we have some interaction with one another. We're all really common people.
The base instincts. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I took anthropology.
So the fact of the matter is, okay, that everybody really is on the same level, and we all have to become enlightened to another level than we are now regarding this issue. And so if you can help us to do that, Virginia, that would be a fantastic mission.
Well, I will do what I can. I've spoken with Ginger. I've spoken with some others. Uh-huh. People are kind of stuck in their own mindsets, or their own objectives. They want to educate. But I've had some breakthroughs, amazingly, in the past week or so. But not along your lines, along others. Okay. I guess I should just, you know, forge on. But
the idea of
a state standing militia proposed in Nebraska when we can't even get nullification, which some 32 other states have adopted against unconstitutional federal laws, is rather problematic. And there are certain discussions and debates going on here, and we do have SAC, Strategic Air Command, and things. And people are speaking out against this vociferously.
Virginia, I got some more good news for you. The 10th Amendment Center, they're started an education movement, and they got the states, boom, this happened. I would really like to hear some other, I'm glad you're trudging on somewhat, Virginia, but I'd like to hear some thoughts from some possibly other callers.
Well, I didn't know I was holding you up. I mean, I just get called. Go ahead. But, I mean, there's a discussion on drones here going, and it's even coming from the far left. And it's a murderous criminal anti-Geneva Convention situation, unconstitutional, and I'm glad it's happening. But it's coming from the left.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are some other but this has to stop. It has to stop. We do not need this.
Mm-hmm.
Extraterritorially or territorially. So I thank you, gentlemen, for your time and interest. And yes, there are many other people that are very concerned, and I will continue to try to do my utmost. Thank you.
Thank you for your sharing, Virginia. Take care. We appreciate
you
very
much.
Good night.
Yes, thank you very much. And I do see, unfortunately, though, there's only about 15 minutes left of the extended version. And the last five of that, I'll be taking, you know, to close out the show. And I do see that there are some more callers on the line here. So if you'd like to chime in and
Robert,
say some, go ahead.
Robert, just for a moment, could I share about a minute? Right here, just to make sure that we don't miss this before the end of the show, I'd like to just share with people some practical things that we'd like to invite them to do. Just one more time before the show ends. Firstly, we do have our website, Revitalizing the Second Amendment, at rt2a.org. And we have a Facebook page. We'd like to encourage everyone who hears this show, whenever you hear it, to go to facebook.com/rt2a.org and like our page. Look at the materials on that page as well. I would also like to encourage everyone to get a copy of the materials that Dr. Vera has written, Constitutional Homeland Security, which for our organization is the operating manual, kind of like the Boy Scout manual for the Boy Scouts. The book Constitutional Homeland Security is the operating manual for revitalizing the Second Amendment. It gives us the instructions on how to first of all, understand the issue, and then how to create your Citizen Homeland Security Association in your local area to bring the people in your local area together to deal with the issues of homeland security from the bottom up. Then there's the book, The Sword and Sovereignty, that Dr. Vera has just written. It's in the CD. It's 2,304 pages long. It's a tremendous work that explains the history of the militia of the several states and the constitutional principles of the militia of the several states in a volume that is as exhaustive as anything out there we've seen on the subject. Dr. Vera points out at the beginning of the book that most of the main books out there on the Constitution have two or three pages on the Second Amendment. He's written 2,300 pages on the Second Amendment. And so it's a tremendous volume that we believe every citizen, every patriot who really cares about the direction our country is going should get a copy of and take the time to read through it. And it's a belaboring work because it's a legal book, but it's a very valuable one for all of us. And we should take the time to study this material. Thirdly, he's got a DVD series of eight hours that we have up on the website as well that you can purchase. And again, at this point, we don't make a penny off of any of these items. Dr. Vera makes royalty on them. We don't. We believe it's important to get this information out there. And for people, the first step in this whole process is being reeducated. And these three vehicles are very valuable for that. And then in just about a week to 2 weeks from now, we will have a membership drive for revitalizing the Second Amendment on our website. You'll be able to click on the link to become a member and register. It's going to be like the National Rifle Association or Gun Owners of America or any of the other gun rights organizations are, except we are not a gun rights organization. We are a First Amendment revitalization organization. We're trying to put back the first clause of the Second Amendment, which precludes the right to keep and bear arms. And so we just want to encourage you to look at this information, share it with your friends, help us to prepare for when we do launch our membership drive for the organization, because we're looking to expand from the state of Florida and the Citizen Homeland Community Associations that we're developing here to doing this in all of the several states, because we'll start slow and we'll build, but eventually we're hoping that we have this process going in every state of the union. And we're connecting people all over this country. Don't despise the day of small things, as it says in the scriptures. We aren't despising these days when things are small. We hope to build this fairly rapidly and have this as a conversation all over the country. So I just wanted to make sure that we got a chance to say that one last time. Is there anything else anybody from the board or from the organization wants to share that I've forgotten?
Gentlemen, whether Richard there and also Kelly?
I think I covered it.
So all right. I'm multitasking here. I'm chatting with someone here as well as doing some notes here and getting ready to do some things for closing out the show. But as I do have, as I said, some folks here listening to the extended time, and thank you very much for spending the time to stay for this version. And so if you'd like to chime in, I know we don't have a lot of time left, probably, frankly, just about 3 minutes or so. But if not, there's going to be other nights where people will have the opportunity to call in. Just push the 1 on your number dial. If not, I'm sure we'll have people listening in again. So, and yes, I did have a message here from the chat. Thank you, Cindy, for your input. And, yes, I will be putting some of the info on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, and that will be to go to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And I will also be putting on a link for the folks who have not heard this show to the rt2a.org, the Revitalizing the Second Amendment. I'll be putting the link there for those who have not come in tonight so they can have access to it. But thank you very much. Okay, I see that she does want to chime in real quick, so let me open up your mic. This is Cindy Todd, who has done a few shows, or more than a few shows with me as well, co-hosting. So we've got a few minutes left, Cindy. Thank you very much for calling in. How are you?
Well, I'm doing a little tired right now, but I'm
all
right.
Well, it's 1 a.m. in our time zone, but that's okay.
Well, I was just wondering, I wanted to ask the guys, it seems like we need some political backing for this. In other words, we've got to get some politicians behind us on this. Is there anything we can do as far as contacting them, our representatives, because we've got a whole lot of rhinos up there in Washington and a few in our own state capitals.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we handle this with those guys?
Well, I know I sound like I've got a single string on the guitar, but I believe that the Citizens Homeland Security Association chapters are a key piece to this. When we start getting people revitalized within our local communities and they start coming together and they learn what this is about, we're going to be going back to our legislators. For instance, I went to my legislator last year. There were only two of us in the meeting. When we go back again, we're going to have 200 going to that meeting. We're going to approach her and say, listen, we want you to help us to put back in place the militia of the state of Florida. We want you to help us work on legislation. Whatever way she responds to that, if she responds in the negative, we will run against her in the next election. And then we will also put a candidate. We'll put a candidate on the other side, on the other party side, who also wants to revitalize the militia of the state, and we will work to get that person elected so that both sides of the aisle will have someone going into the legislature who wants to revitalize the militia of the state of Florida. We will do that in every legislative district, hopefully in the state of Florida, or at least raise the bar enough that they've got to include that in their conversation, you see. And this is how this is going to gain the momentum that's necessary for this to become a political issue again. Right now, it's not even being in the conversation. So this is the means by which we are moving forward to address this issue in the state of Florida and what we want to do in every state of the union. We will replace legislators who understand this concept.
Okay, I'm in Florida.
What part?
So I'm in Volusia County.
Okay.
I think my senator is Huckel.
Okay. Who's your representative? Who's your legislator?
Well,
it's okay. It doesn't matter. The point is, eventually, here's the strategy. If we have 50 to 100 people in each county, in each legislative district, who completely understand the concept of what we're trying to do, so that no matter which one of those people that legislator asks a question to when we meet them in a session, how powerful will that be?
Yeah.
That's the whole point here.
The only reason I ask you who you're talking about going in to see is because I might be able to go in with you if she's my.
Certainly. She'd be District 9, which is Tallahassee.
Okay.
Leon County, yeah. And I'm not mentioning her name only because this is a national show and that name will be on the airwaves all across the country, and I'm just trying to be for, you know, it's just to be kind to her at the moment. She did say she liked the idea. The thing that was interesting, I did a presentation. She was very gracious and gave us a full hour of her time. And she said at the end, I really like your idea, David, but I'd like to ask you one thing. Would you remove the word militia from it? And that's a problem. And the reason that's a problem is because, frankly, you can't relieve yourself of the rhetorical, propagandistic, or practical political handicap simply by taking the verbal device of removing the word militia out of the statement, because the militia of the several states is the constitutional establishment that needs to be revitalized. So how can you remove it and revitalize it at the same time? It's the very name, the only name that the Constitution recognizes for these establishments based upon what the founders put in place and existed 150 years before the Constitution.
It does seem that request would contradict what we're trying to do. Unfortunately, we are about out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate you spending as much time as you did on the show tonight. Of course, it is being archived, so folks can listen to it later in its entirety for those who missed the extended version and only listened to the live. But, of course, also you can download these onto iPhones, iPads, computers and things like that nature, and also to share it that way. Of course, you can also share the link with folks to get out the information. The link can also be put on you know, other page websites, as I've seen before. And I'll use an example is we did a show where I interviewed Christina Tobin from freeandequal.org, and they put a link to the show with her interview on there. And speaking of freeandequal.org, folks, check that out, as well as the United We Stand Festival website. And you could find, of course, as I said earlier, links to those on barslogictalk.com. And so I do have a few minutes, but I'd like to take that to thank everyone again for coming on. Of course, I definitely would like to have everyone on and some more folks as well. I know you guys mentioned there might have been a few other people who would call in and have shows on this. So, yeah, we definitely can do this again if you gentlemen and ladies are interested. And so I will close out the show as I do every night and say good night, everyone. Take care. Hope to see you again. And until next time, I will play this song from Aubrey Ashburn, and folks can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.